All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out and a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight, feel alright, I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from this.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday. And you can request now. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Get them in now. We'll play them later. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. That's also the phone number to call for talk or text. Anytime you want to join on the conversation or jump onto the show with us, you can at 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. It is Thursday, and we're going to be talking with our good friend Dan Feinberg. He joins us every other Thursday to talk TV. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. And we got a lot of TV to talk about, as usual with Dan. He's one of our favorites, and he joins us every couple of weeks. And so we'll talk to him a little bit later on to talk about TV. Lots of other stuff we're going to be talking about. Some things that we think we're doing right, we're doing wrong. And to kind of piggyback on that, there is what is the ideal way to butter movie theater popcorn? This is a very, important debate. And we'll get into that. Also, fast food menu items that fast food employees say that you should never, ever order. It's a public service. We're going to let you know about that. And then we'll jump into some historic movie box office bombs. That's all coming up on the show. Again, 312-981-7200 for talk and text, Triple Play Thursday requests. And also subscribe to our podcasts. It's a great way to stay connected to the show. Every single second of every single show is podcast. You can subscribe, go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Tons of people listen to our podcasts and subscribe, and we're really, really thankful for that. Thank you very much. And so subscribe. It's free. You'll get them delivered directly to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So that's what's coming up on the show. Let me say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you, Nick?
All right. You had a morning off.
I did. I had to do a little bit of extracurricular work.
Right. It's associated with the radio station.
Correct.
So
yes.
You didn't just like take a holiday.
No.
No, you didn't. But
I could have stayed at home and done, a dissertation on The Thing, but
you had to do other stuff. So, well, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
We thank Sammy for filling in for you.
Oh, he's great.
In the morning, yesterday morning, and he's back. Tom is back. And let's go into the newsroom with my buddy Vic Vaughn.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing, sir?
Not bad. Did you get to see any of the Cub game?
I woke up and asked Alexa, and she told me they were up 7-3 right before I got in the shower, because I sleep I sleep into the night. So.
Right.
And then by the time I got in here, it looks like they barely held on.
Well,
7-6.
Yeah. They had an insane sixth inning. Let me just say this.
Okay.
It was an insane. They were down 3-0. And then in the sixth inning, both Javi, who is inhuman.
Oh, yeah.
Both Javi and Hayward in the same inning hit 2 3-run homers. Javi hit one.
Wow.
Javi hit one, and then Hayward hit one.
Oh, okay.
So
I see what happened.
So they were up,
I didn't know that yet.
They were up 6-3, all right? And then in the seventh, Rizzo hit one.
Oh, man.
So they were up 7-3 going into the eighth.
And then what happened in the eighth? Who was?
Well, it was, what's his name? The reliever, Sitkich? What's his, I can't remember his last name.
Mm.
He came in, blew the lead.
Okay.
So they were 7-6 going into the ninth. And then Strope, by the way, He walked the first batter. I almost had a heart attack. Then he struck out, and then they grounded into a double play, and they won the game. But they the score did not need to be 7-6 going into the ninth.
That's what I thought when I got here. Yeah. Wow.
But they won. And it was exciting, and they're playing good ball, man. They're playing good ball.
They are playing good ball, and that's a lot of offense. It sounds like relief pitching maybe still.
A little bit. A little shaky. Man,
that's awesome.
2 3-run homers in one inning. I don't know if that's ever been done before.
Wow.
Crazy. All right. That was a fun game.
I'll be watching tomorrow. It's 1:20.
It's a 1:20 start, so there you go. Okay, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with our friend Dan Feinberg about TV.
TV party tonight! We're going to have our TV party tonight! All right! We're going to have our TV party, all right! Tonight! Saturday Night Live!
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. A little later on, we are going to be talking about things that we're all doing wrong. We got some other food stories that we're going to get to. And we're going to talk about some of the biggest box office bombs of all time, which I don't think the Avengers will be. I just have a feeling. I have a strong, I don't know, I'm taking a risk on guessing that, but I don't think it's going to be a bomb. it opened in China with a one-day total of the equivalent of $100 million in one day. So it's going to be ridiculous. All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. Every couple of weeks, we talk with Dan Feinberg, our good friend, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Always lots of TV to talk about, and we're always happy to have Dan here. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
How are you, sir?
Oh, busy, busy, busy. How about you?
I'm all right. I'm pretty busy. And we've got a lot of TV to talk about, as usual. I don't watch Game of Thrones. I'm one of the six people on the planet who don't. But you did do. You have reviewed the premiere, and but I'm assuming you did. Of course. How many episodes have you seen?
I've only seen two. The two that have aired, HBO is keeping these very, very close to the vest, especially with each week's increasing level of drama and chaos and mystery and whatever. So, they are not giving us things early. I had to fly to New York early in order to see the one that I saw early. So I'm just watching them with everyone else.
And you watched it like at the big premiere party with everybody was there, and it was a blast.
Exactly. Whereas the second episode, I just watched on TV.
Okay, kind of a letdown after that. Well, what are you thinking so far? I mean, I know, you know, everybody's watching it. It's the big thing on the television right now. So I thought we'd lead with it.
For sure. Well, first of all, why are you not watching it? Why is it not a Nick show?
I gave up on it 3/4 of the way through the first season. I was like, I don't know what the hell's going on, and I don't care. So I just stopped. I found it utterly confusing, and I didn't care who was what or anything. There was, you know, there wasn't enough boobs for me to be interested. They tried, and there's the beheadings and dragons and all that stuff I should like. I just sat there every week going, what? So, and I just haven't gone back.
Fair enough. I mean, I can't argue if you gave it a few episodes, and it definitely is a show with a lot of moving pieces, and you have to invest at least a certain amount of interest. And some of the time, that's heavily paid off, and others of the time, perhaps a little bit less so. I think the first two episodes of the second season have been very much setting things in motion for the third episode that's coming this weekend. So
that's what everybody on my news feed was like when they finished watching episode two and they all posted, you know, all this stuff. Everybody was like, next week's going to be awesome. They really didn't say anything about the episode they just watched. They just said, next week's going to be awesome. So that seems to be the running trend there.
I think that without any question, probably the things that happened in the first two episodes with a little bit of careful editing and thought could have been combined into one maybe 85-minute kind of prelude season opening episode, which isn't to say that I thought either of the first two episodes were bad. They were just very much both combined. There was the first episode was sort of putting everybody in place and reminding you of where they were and what the stakes were and all that. And then the second episode was basically all of the characters walking around saying that they were probably going to die next week. And that's... which is totally a valid reaction when an army of the living dead is walking onto your castle. It's not like anyone was, you know, discovering anything.
Right.
There's an army of zombies coming on the castle. This is not really spoiling anything, so hopefully your listeners are not freaking out. But yes, last week's episode was largely all of the characters going around saying, yeah, we're probably going to die tomorrow, and then the other half of the characters saying, hey, let's talk a little bit about the journey we've been on for the last six seasons, years, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I still thought it was very effective, because the fact is, when things start going crazy, when people start dying, when whoever it is who's going to take the Iron Throne eventually moves to the Iron Throne and all of that, there's endless room for disappointment and frustration. And as the show gets destination-generated, destination-driven, people are going to have it not live up to what their expectations are. And so there's a possibility for disappointment. Whereas the past 2 weeks weren't like that. They were about bringing together characters who we hadn't seen together for years, who maybe when we last saw them, they were pushing each other out of the window so that they could sleep with their sister, hypothetically speaking. That might or might not be a situation.
Right.
And I thought all of that was handled extremely well. And this week, there were a bunch of scenes that were really emotional, that hit home in terms of simple, clean, beautiful performances by actors who have been living with these characters for years. Mm. And so there will be more carnage next week. There will be more action choreography. Apparently it's going to be 82 minutes of nonstop action. Everyone's talking about, oh, the biggest, longest action scene in the history of TV. And maybe it'll be great. I hope it'll be great. But there was something really satisfying about these first two episodes, and I appreciated it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I just wanted to mention this. We haven't talked since it premiered, because it premiered 10 days ago, 11 days ago. But I just want to mention that the day that it premiered, the Sunday that it premiered on the 14th, Chicago was slammed with 6 inches of snow, and I was like, HBO, bravo, way to go real far with your advertising. So everybody in Chicago was posting. It was like, okay, nice. Okay, we got it, HBO. Winter is coming. And, you know, so we got 6 inches of snow in the middle of April, which is not, uncommon here in Chicago. Every once in a while they get that. But I just thought it was really weirdly coincidental that happened. We got nailed on the day that Game of Thrones was coming back.
But then it was also 70 degrees the next day,
yeah.
and so that's when sort of the climate change allegory of the entire show really comes to the forefront, when it can go from winter's coming to, oh yeah, right here, summer. So Chicago, right. the whole show is really apparently all about Chicago.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's really what, maybe I should go back and start watching it again. I didn't realize that it was that local connection. I'm assuming it's doing monster ratings.
Oh, heavens yes. No, the first week episode drew the largest kind of recordable audience in the show's history, and HBO has been putting together kind of fudging. I mean, they're not really fudging. They're just sort of fabricated numbers, because it's a combination of live viewership plus HBO Go, but only in 24 hours, on the assumption that really most of the people watching this final season really are watching it live, which is not the case with just about any other show on television. So people don't really want to have things spoiled. Now, the fact is, I really could spoil almost nothing for your listeners from the first two episodes. In terms of actual quote-unquote twists or revelations or whatever, that's not what the first two episodes have been about, but the theory, the expectation, the whatever, is that this Sunday's episode, people are going to die. And I think people are almost going to be disappointed. Fans are going to be disappointed if it turns out that only one or two semi-major or major characters get destroyed in this episode this weekend. So, it could be dozens of our favorite characters are going to be wiped off the face of the Westeros planet where this all takes place. And I don't know that I necessarily think that's the case, but I think this weekend's episode is going to be one that people are going to be making a point to watch live in a way that they don't watch anything this side of the Super Bowl and the Oscars live.
Yeah. All I know is judging by my news feed that everybody is going insane over this. There's no question about it. How many episodes are there total for the season?
There are only six, and the first two, it was a big deal that the first two were both under an hour. They were both fully regulation episodes.
Right.
My understanding is the last four are all going to be various degrees of supersized, starting with this weekend's, which I believe 82 minutes is what everyone is saying. And, at this point, the hype around it has probably reached a dangerous point. And if I were the HBO producers, I would be very quietly whispering, it'll get bigger. Don't worry, just in case anyone's expecting this weekend's episode to basically be the climax of the entire series. So, who knows? I am looking forward to it, and I will definitely be watching live on Sunday night.
Okay, very, very, very cool. So that's a Game of Thrones, which needs all the help it can get. I know that it needs more publicity, just like that little indie movie that's coming out.
It is amazing the amount of oxygen that Game of Thrones and Avengers Endgame sucking up in the media at this point.
It's remarkable. It's incredible, really. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like it. You can't turn on the TV or anything or go online without seeing either of those franchises everywhere. And the people who star in them and the creators of them are all over the place.
It is it's not monomaniacal, because it's duomaniacal,
right.
I guess, but
right.
In terms of kind of, if you wanted to, like, if tomorrow Beyonce were to drop a new album or something, I think that would be the only thing that could kind of split it into three, and that could actually equal the other two, but otherwise, you've got these two total juggernauts, and they're all that anyone is talking about, and I feel like there are other good things to talk about as well.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to break, and we're going to talk about other good things in the TV world. Okay, Dan?
Excellent.
All right, Dan, hang on. Dan Feinberg is with us. We're going to take a break for the news. When we come back, we'll talk more TV with Dan, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and more TV to talk about right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200. That's also the number to call for Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. It's TV talk. Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. Lots of TV stuff to talk about, so let's welcome Dan back. You can follow him, by the way, on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And Dan, welcome back.
Thank you. So much TV. So, The Avengers, Endgame.
Yeah.
No?
No. Let's talk about the second season of Cobra Kai. Season two has premiered. So what do you think?
I love that transition. So either Avengers Endgame or Game of Thrones or Cobra Kai.
Right.
The thing about Cobra Kai is, and the second season premiered on Wednesday on YouTube, is that the first season was able to premiere with, at least for critics, with no expectations whatsoever. We got those episodes, and YouTube was like, yeah, here's our show. It's our 30 years after Karate Kid, Billy Zabka, Ralph Macchio. Yeah, we got them. And that's about it. And, I think we were all kind of blown away by the fact that the series itself turned out to actually be a thing of God forbid, a little bit of substance. I think that the first season is very much still driven by nostalgia, and it's driven by the idea that if Karate Kid was an important part of your youth or upbringing, or just cinema vocabulary from the 80s, you enjoyed revisiting these characters, seeing where they had gone, seeing the inversion of, you know, okay, what if Billy Zabka's Johnny Lawrence either wasn't a bad guy or was to some degree a victim as well, and he had a chance at, you know, doing it all over again, and could he become the good guy in this story? And the show worked because almost couldn't possibly have been better. You can't imagine that story being told better than it was in the first season of Cobra Kai. Mm. And the second season, it's not told as well. And that's just what it is. It's repetitive. It doesn't step out of the mold that the first season stepped. So it's, again, it's all just building to Cobra Kai versus Miyagi-Do, whose karate methodology and themes will reign supreme, which is the better way of shaping young people into good people, and which is shaping young people into bullies. You know there's the big fight coming, and there's a certain amount of repetition, and there's a certain amount of diminishing returns from it, because if you're doing an underdog sports movie, you have to find a way to change the formula up enough in the second time around so that you still like the underdogs, so the underdogs haven't become the favorites.
Yeah.
And so the second season, to me, didn't really do that. But the thing is, if this season had been the first season of Cobra Kai, I'd be telling you, wow, it's a lot better than I would have expected it to be.
Yeah, I see.
And so that's where it is. I think if your expectations have gotten too high after the first season, maybe the second season will disappoint you. But if your expectations are somewhere near where they were in the first season, it works sometimes and often well. Just a little repetitive.
So, by the way that you tell the story, it seemed like YouTube was like, yeah, here's a little show, and then the thing took off. Now, did YouTube handle the second season a little differently?
I think they had a sense that it was a bigger thing. The first season, we had screeners to us months in advance. YouTube was like, yeah, sure, review it, kind of, whenever you want to. We'd love to get some reviews for this. Honestly, any publicity is probably good publicity.
Right.
This time around, reviews were embargoed strictly to the start of when it premiered, which is the kind of thing that really doesn't make any sense to me, because reviews haven't actually been negative, because it's not bad, and a lot of the people who liked the first season loved the second season as well. But definitely, this was one where they knew they had a potentially big audience. They were boasting about the number of people watching the trailer and all of that. And yeah, it is, for YouTube at least, it's kind of become their only thing. YouTube has already, in fact, begun to step away to some degree from original productions. They canceled a number of their shows after only one season. They haven't really had any breakout hits beyond this. So for YouTube, this is kind of their only standard bearer. And I suspect it will continue to be. I really do think a lot of the people who loved the first season are going to like the second season at least as much, because it's roughly the same. It just comes down to whether your expectation is that it's going to do something bigger or better or smarter. And, you know, for example, it's not like Karate Kid 2 is a great movie. I think anyone who thinks Karate Kid 2 is a great movie, kind of their brain's a little bit out of sync. Kid 2 is still an audacious movie in the sense that they pick up the whole story and go to Okinawa, and it becomes this reverse culture clash thing. And it really does try to do something very, very different. Whether it does it well or not is almost secondary. This doesn't do that. It's set in the exact same part of the valley, filmed still in Atlanta, and it's basically summer vacation, so everyone has nothing to do other than train at karate the entire time, and so that's all they do.
Okay. All right. Well, it debuted on Wednesday, and it's on YouTube if people want to watch it. Okay. All right. I watched the first episode of Bless This Mess on ABC. I have the second episode on my DVR at home. I haven't watched it yet. Have you watched both?
I have watched both. They only had the first episode to send to critics before premiere, which is really never a good sign. And TV shows and TV networks shouldn't do that if they can avoid it. And since ABC had the second episode available literally the day after, I don't know why they were hiding it. But yes, I have seen both of the episodes of Bless This Mess.
Okay, tell everybody about Bless This Mess and the general concept of it.
The general concept is that it was created by Liz Merriweather of New Girl and Single Parents, currently of ABC, along with Lake Bell, who also directed the pilot. Lake Bell, anyone who has seen In a World knows that she's a very talented writer, director. And so the conceit is that Lake Bell and Dax Shepard play a rather stereotypical New York couple who they inherit his great aunt's farmhouse in Nebraska, and due to some circumstances and some missing things in their lives, decide that they're going to go to Nebraska and become farmers and leave their New York lives behind. And so faster than you can say, We Bought a Zoo or Green Acres or any of the other various shows and movies in which these things happen, they go to Nebraska and discover that they know very, very little about farming, and that they have a freeloading neighbor played by Ed Begley Jr. who lives in their farm, and that the town's store owner and sheriff is played by Pam Grier. And probably that's all the show has going for it, but that's theoretically at least enough, because those are some really, really good elements to have in place.
And also, Dan, don't forget Koechner's in it too.
Dave Koechner's in it. Lennon Parham's in it. It's a really, really good cast.
A great cast. Great cast.
And so it's the kind of show where if you told me by episode 15 that it was going to become a really solid network comedy, I would probably believe you. So far, it's a little hung up on very, very, very familiar cliches and formula. And I do think I laughed a couple times more at the second episode than I laughed at the first, but that might just be the difference of 3 versus 2. But I chuckled at both episodes, and it's enough to keep me watching, because sometimes Liz Merriweather's shows start a little bit slow and get better. I thought that Single Parents started off a little bumpy and has become a show that I enjoy. It's not a show I laugh at a tremendous amount, but it's a show I like on a low level, and I can see how this would be that. What did you think of the first episode?
I actually thought it was funny. I laughed a lot, and I think most of it to do with the supporting cast. I thought Ed Begley was hilarious, and I thought the stuff between him and Pam Grier, I thought Pam Grier was really funny. I laughed quite a bit. The main problem is that I find the supporting characters much more interesting than the two main characters. And I happen to really, really like Lake Bell a lot. And so that brought a lot of the reason why I enjoyed watching the pilot so much is because she's actually one of my favorite performers. I think she's a great writer and a very good director. So, and I like Dax Shepard. But again, yeah, I mean, you know, this is not, there's nothing new in this at all. You know what I mean? There's not one new thing in it, but I thought it was executed well. And I really thought the supporting cast was very funny. So I laughed quite a bit. There you go. Dan Feinberg is with us. And that we were just talking about Bless This Mess, which is on Tuesday nights on ABC at 8:30 Central Time. So there you go. All right, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more TV with Dan right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m., 312-981-7200 for talk and text and for your Triple Play Thursday requests. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them in a bit. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Coming up a little bit later on, we got a couple of food stories we're going to get to. We're going to talk about things that we've been doing wrong that we thought we were doing right, and some big box office bombs. All of that and more. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page, too, at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Right now, we are returning with our good friend Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots of TV to talk about. Let's bring Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Let's do a couple of things that we talk about pretty much every time you come on. First of all, Better Things, that Easter episode was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Where did you stand on the Easter episode?
Well, did you prefer it to the toilet episode the week before? Because I think I might have premiered preferred the toilet episode the week before, but they were both great episodes.
It's the best show on TV right now, and Pamela Adlon is just, she's amazing. And the toilet episode, I was the hardest I laughed. I think at any episode this season, it was unbelievably hilarious and really, really funny and great. But the Easter episode kind of just punched me in the gut. The speech that Kevin Pollak gives about the kid's dad in the car, I just thought was unbelievable and beautiful and really beautifully delivered by Pollak. And that last scene with Margaret Avery was just, I mean, I was just, I kind of stunned when it ended. I was just kind of sitting on my couch going, oh my God. And that's the kind of level that, those are the kind of levels that Adlon reaches with this show. On both levels, I think, in both episodes that have aired since we talked last, they're both unbelievably great in different ways.
I definitely agree that the episode, it's something that she does so well, where she lures you along with light humor and silly humor and light humor and silly humor and, oh, there's Phyllis, Celia Imrie is her mother, and she's getting really competitive about Easter egg hunts,
right,
and she's knocking a little kid in the pool, and you know, oh, she's vaguely senile, and so this is sort of like, ha ha ha, she's funny, and then it just really does, it puts the knife in and twists, and the fact that the show can do that and does it so confidently and just kind of drops the mic and walks away.
Yes.
That scene and the way they use Kevin Pollak really is wonderful. And Kevin Pollak's having a very good moment. He's also being very well used right now on Billions. That character can sort of have the flustery moments where he's just blowing up at his mother, and it's like, oh, he's being a flippity-jibbit and whatever. And then he has that monologue with Duke.
Yeah.
In the back of the car, and again, it's just, okay, I've been silly, I've been funny for 5-10 minutes, now I'm gonna actually punch you in the gut. The show does that so wonderfully.
Yeah, and it's just so great. I mean, I look forward to it every week, and again, we talked about it, that it's renewed, and that's just a really good thing. So that's one of the other things that we talk about all the time. Okay, so it took till the third episode of Barry for me not to laugh. And then I, you know, so what you were talking about before, I barely laughed, but it was an unbelievable episode this past Sunday night.
Was this past Sunday the third or the fourth episode?
Fourth episode.
Okay. Yeah, okay. No, this past week was about as good as I think Bill Hader's ever been.
Oh, my God,
He was intense and scary this week, there was very little funny in this week's episode.
Yeah.
Other than perhaps Henry Winkler's reaction to hearing the real story.
Yeah.
Which, again, I'm never sure what the real story is or isn't, but this week's version of this story, if we assume it's real, Winkler has one beat when he reacts, which is hilarious. And then, of course, you had NoHo Hank, whatever he was doing this week, which for some reason was playing Dr. Moreau from Island of Dr. Moreau.
Right.
I don't know why, but... So those two beats made me laugh. Otherwise, the entire episode was me watching Bill Hader going, wow, he's a little bit scary. And now I also can't wait to see him in the second part of It later this year. Like, I want to see him being freaked out and scary and intense because he's really good at that.
He's really good at it, man. And it was a very intense episode, the way they ended episode 3 so abruptly. was like, whoa, like when that ended, I was like, uh-oh, you know, the shot of Hader's face reacting to the ex-boyfriend showing up was pretty amazing. And they took that last, like, it seems to me like they took the final image of that, the insane, you know, surprise and tenseness of that moment, and just stretched it out to half an hour.
I think I'm admiring more each week what they're doing on that show, and I think there was just a learning curve with viewers and how the show is adjusting its tone, and I admire what they're doing. And you know, if I want broad laughter, Veep is still delivering week in and week out, and it's not suddenly becoming a darker, more serious show. It's just being Veep, so it can do that, and I like that the two shows can have the contrast. It's almost like over an hour, you get the kind of back-and-forth contrast that Better Things does in 22 minutes.
That's but, right. There you go. Exactly.
Whatever.
Exactly. I did unfortunately watch an episode of Abby's, and I just watched it because when you reviewed it the last time, there are people in it that I really like, including Neil Flynn. And I will not be revisiting Abby's. I watched the one episode of it, and I thought it was just terrible.
It's not good, and I've now seen, I guess, 5 total episodes, and I think I might just check out, and if it gets renewed, check back next season to see how it's going.
Yeah.
'Cause very clearly, whatever happens in the rest of the season isn't really going to stick or be deeply meaningful. So if it wants to get renewed, I can definitely give it another shot come hypothetical season 2. But yeah, it's not good. And
the episode that I saw was the one where they're trying to get Neil Flynn to date the other person in the bar, and you know, and all that. And I was just like, like 15 minutes in, I was like, oh my God. And then I just kept laughing because the thing that you mentioned that just made me laugh, the only time I laughed was when they mentioned the live studio audience outside in the bleachers. And that cracked me up when you talked about it a couple of weeks ago. And that was the only time I legitimately laughed, was when they referred to the audience. That's the only time I laughed.
And I still, again, having seen 5 episodes, I still don't know what they think they're getting out of it. It's just confusing. It's not like it's a bad idea, but they haven't really changed the look of the show in any way. It doesn't look or feel different for all the live outdoor shooting. It should feel more immediate in some way, and it really feels very canned and very old fashioned in a way that I don't think it's intended to.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's get up to our biweekly mention of Fosse Verdon. Love this show. I absolutely love it. I just think it's great. And the two leads are on, but particularly Michelle Williams. Michelle Williams is unbelievable. But they're both really great, and I love the style of it. And I love how each episode has kind of a real different directorial style to it that actually pays attention to the way Bob Fosse would direct. You know, the last one with him wanting to have Gwen Verdon in the editing room with him, trying to edit Cabaret, and then the backstory behind what happened to Gwen Verdon earlier in her life, I thought was just really great and beautifully done. And the week before was my favorite episode so far of the season, where she gets cast, and it's their first scene, their first scene together. When she's auditioning, I just thought that was just such beautifully directed and so well written and choreographed. That was my favorite. Second episode of the season was my favorite so far.
I thought the scene where he has the audition with her, the choreography audition, I thought that was a great scene. Otherwise, I thought the second episode was my least favorite.
Really?
Of the three. I don't know. It just didn't work for me otherwise. Though, you know, I liked the recreation of the stuff from Dan Mankiewicz, et cetera. The third episode, I liked the stuff with her so much. And yes, this episode, much more than the first two, I thought was really Michelle Williams just going, okay, clear out.
Yeah.
This is me.
Yeah.
This is me showing what I can do.
Yeah.
And I thought she had 3 or 4 beats that just killed me. And also, but the problem with that was that every time she does that, and it's not to say that I think that Sam Rockwell and his hairpiece are bad, but his story is one that I feel like I know, and her story is one I don't feel like I know.
Right.
So every time they concentrate on him and his self-destructive tendencies and him getting drunk and flirting with another floozy, I go, okay, I know your story. I've seen your story. Get back to her.
Yeah.
And, or alternatively, give me the Patty Chayefsky reluctant babysitter show.
Okay,
that one I would watch.
Dan, hang on. Okay, we got to take a break.
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us. He's referring to a scene that took place in the last episode where Patty Chayefsky is babysitting for Bob Fosse's daughter. It's classic. Okay, anyway, we got to take a break. We'll come back. We got the news, and after the news, more TV talk with Dan Feinberg right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday, that is. So get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking, we've got some things that we've all been doing wrong, some food stories, and some stories about some of the biggest box office flops of all time. So stick around. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. So Dan Feinberg is here. We're talking TV. Let's welcome him back. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, what do you make of this story about the writers firing their agents? Over 7,000 WGA members fired their agents. What's the story behind that?
The story behind that is that agents are outraged about what they see as illegal and unethical, basically side dealing or back dealing involving agencies, the practice known as packaging, which is basically when agencies can put together writers, directors, and actors from in-house and make them part of a single package. But writers say that this is a practice that doesn't incentivize the agents to get the best deal for each individual one of their clients, but rather to get the best deal for their agency. And I mean, I tend to be pro writer and pro guild, and I have no particular reason to be pro agent. And so, I am at this moment very much in the corner of the writers. I don't have a clue what this is actually going to mean, because they filed a suit, the Writers Guild did, against the agencies, and they're seeking a dissolving of the current terms of the contract between them, but also restitution from all of the years of packaging practices and the money that may or may not have been lost. But given that this is Hollywood and Hollywood accounting, no one is ever going to see that money, or if they do, it's going to be for years in the future. And so I don't know what ordinary people are going to notice coming out of this. And that's where I'm just raising my eyebrows and sort of standing back and watching to see how this story is going to evolve. Because this is not like a Writers Guild strike situation where suddenly people are going to run out of scripts, and you know, Big Brother is going to come back in the middle of the year, and we're going to get censored episodes of Dexter, and there's going to be no new TV. It's not going to be that. It's just going to be a strange, imbalanced situation where writers are working under different terms with managers representing them. It's going to be a very interesting thing to watch play out, and I don't have a clue what it's going to mean or do.
I've never seen this. I mean, this has never happened before where, 7,000 writers fire their agents. I mean, this is a first, correct?
This particular variation on labor strife is unique. And, of course, you know, listeners will maybe probably remember the 2007 Writers Guild strike, which actually produced a lot of tangible changes, but also speed bumps that viewers could actually notice at home. I've referenced a couple of them, including the random in-season Big Brother season and Dexter on Sunday nights on CBS with bleeps.
Yeah.
Because they simply ran out of programming.
Right.
And a lot of shows really never recovered from it. You know, whether something like Pushing Daisies is kind of the quintessential example of a show that was doing spectacularly before the Writers Guild strike. And then when it came back, the audience had forgotten it existed and the show died after two seasons. So, yeah, this is a very different thing from that, and it's completely possible that people at home who don't follow 50 entertainment journalists and three trade publications on Twitter won't have a clue that this is even happening.
Right, true.
But for people in my particular bubble, it really is a thing that everyone is talking about pretty much nonstop, so...
Yeah. Well, they're covering it, and we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting to see what happens. It's not like they've never had a writer's strike before, obviously. There have been writer strikes in the past several times, but this is just unique in that they're firing their agents.
This is a different thing, and it's not going to be a strike,
at
least as of now. So it's going to be something else, and the tangible impact on the things people watch on TV and the things people see in the movie theaters, it's possible that they're may not be one, but it's also fully possible that there could be a large impact, and we're just going to have to sit back and watch.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on what's going on there. I was very kind of disappointed to see that Netflix canceled Santa Clarita Diet.
I don't know what's happening with Netflix. It's a mystery to me what is happening with Netflix and with what they're keeping and what they're not keeping. And I'm not sure what is driving a lot of their decisions, especially on shows that have been around for only a couple years and where we don't have a clue, of course, what any of their ratings are. So it's hard to understand. And Netflix executive said a couple weeks ago that they might be more transparent with ratings in the future. And I don't even know what that means. Like, they said that they were going to, I don't know what, I don't think that Santa Clarita Diet has been officially canceled, honestly, but I think that, I don't think it's been official, but no one's saying anything.
Okay.
So that's what the problem is. To the best of my knowledge, it is not dead, but there have been stories, if you've looked around the past couple of weeks, about Netflix and why Netflix has been canceling a lot of shows after two or three or four seasons.
Yeah.
So, like One Day at a Time a couple of weeks ago, that one is canceled, and no one knows what's coming with that. I think that there's a lot of limbo, and Santa Clarita Diet is one of those shows that's in limbo. I tell people to listen. I think that at this point, not to listen, to watch. I think that at this point is what might give the show a fourth season, but I don't know necessarily what the advantage is for Netflix if it's not being watched.
Yeah.
But the third season certainly ended in a place where it made me curious what the fourth season was.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
I would be sad if I didn't see that. But yeah, no, if you look at the renewal patterns and cancellation patterns, it's a little bit too soon, because they tend to go sort of 4 to 6 to 8 weeks afterwards, either for renewal or cancellation. If people want this show to survive, you know, they need to watch, they need to tell a friend, and who knows. I'm not wildly optimistic, but I want to believe that I'll see where that third season cliffhanger left off.
Yeah,
but I'll see more.
I would like to see it. I think it's a really good show. For people who don't know, it's Drew Barrymore and Timothy Oliphant in The Suburbanites, and one of them just happens to be a flesh-eating zombie. And the kids are great on that show. The kids are so good on that show. And I really like it. I hope it doesn't get canceled. I'm a fan.
Yeah, you got to lead with the zombie part, because otherwise people think that it's going to be, Timothy Oliphant, Drew Barrymore, romantic comedy, whatever.
No.
It's a zombie show that's a zombie comedy that stars Timothy Oliphant and Drew Barrymore.
And when we say zombie, it doesn't back down from that stuff. It is gross, and if you're a zombie fan, there's a lot of lovely gore in it, and it's got a great sense of humor. So, all right, all the zombie fans need to unite and get that show and keep watching it. So,
agreed.
Speaking of Netflix, you reviewed A Huge in France. Tell everybody about this one.
Well, you see, huge in France, which you probably haven't heard about because its star is, in fact, not huge in America. And that's the premise of the show. That's really all there is. The star of the show is Gad Elmaleh, mm-hmm. who is indeed huge in France. He is described as either the Ray Romano or Jerry Seinfeld of France, and he comes over to the United States where at some point he had a relationship with a woman played by the wonderful Erin Hayes, who one day will get a part worthy of how wonderful she is. And he has a son who's an aspiring model, and his ex is dating a model turned actor played by Matthew Del Negro, and he basically, this playing himself, he goes around telling everyone that he's huge in France and no one in America knows who he is, and that's the premise of the show.
Uh-huh.
This is not hugely inspired, though it has moments. The reason why this would be interesting but also disappointing is that it's created with Andrew Mogul and Jared Paul, who created The Grindr, the Rob Lowe, Fred Savage show from Fox, which was a pretty charming and likable Hollywood satire that only aired one season because sometimes Fox has trouble getting people to watch things.
Yeah,
that's how it goes. But yeah, it's not very funny. It doesn't give you really a reason to understand why the main character is, you know, huge in France and not so much in America, and doesn't really go much beyond that. The part that I find interesting is that the subplot involving the son wanting to become a model and involving the stepfather whose only dream is starring in a Fox period drama about a famous model himself. It's played with a kind of interesting intensity and seriousness, even though the major thrust of it is that the son wants to get pec implants and the father has to find a way to afford his pec implants. I thought that was kind of amusing and audacious, but Netflix only sent out 4 episodes of this to critics, which is always a limitedly inspired sign because Netflix sends out oodles of episodes of everything.
Yeah.
I didn't feel any need to watch beyond the first 4, but the results may vary. Maybe you are in fact French. If so, you will find the main character to be huge.
There you go. All right. What are you working on next, Dan?
Well, what do I have coming up? One of the reviews I have coming up the next couple days is of a Chicago shot show, Red Line on CBS.
I have so many friends in that. It is ridiculous.
I
literally know about 8 people in the cast. So it's crazy.
It is. What I will say is that it is a better than average network drama that actually has things on its mind. Wow. I do not think that it is as good as it would be if it had gone through the development pipeline at basically HBO, FX, you know, the usual suspects.
Yeah.
Netflix again. But I am reticent to be too negative about it because networks take big swings, and this is really a medium swing, but they even take medium swings so rarely that I want to pat CBS on the head for trying.
Right, and right.
I don't care if it's condescending. I want to say, okay, good, you're trying to do a show that's about race, class, and the American city. Good for you.
Yeah.
Do more.
Yeah.
And then that's my reaction. It's not a great show, but it tries, and it does Chicago right. Sometimes you sometimes get the feeling that they're on the ground in Chicago shooting and that has value. So that's the thing that I am working on in the next couple days that's of use and interest to your listeners.
Well, we will definitely get the reactions the next time you're on, because I will be watching it, and then you'll, I'm sure, have the review going, and so we'll talk about it the next time you're here. Dan, always a pleasure. Thanks for hanging out with us, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Until the next time, Nick.
All right, buddy. Take care. Dan Feinberg, everybody. He's the best. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. He'll join us in a couple of weeks to talk more TV. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah. Boy, that reverb has gotten... I had to bring that down a little bit.
You're going crazy with the reverb here.
Man, I don't understand. Yeah! Okay. It's Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. Tom, who requested the Cream?
That's going to be Sam.
Sam. Okay.
I wanted to hear a little Cream. A little Cream of the Crop.
Nothing wrong with Cream. Nothing. In both ways. Like the actual Cream that you put in coffee or something like that. That's also delicious. And so is the band. The band is delicious. Oh, man. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. After the news, we're going to talk about the ideal way to butter movie theater popcorn. This is a very important thing that we need to talk about. And then certain things that are similar to that, that we've been doing wrong. Life hacks. We'll give you a little life hack thing here that we've been doing wrong. And then a little later on, we're going to talk about fast food menu items that fast food employees say that you should never, ever, ever order. And we're also going to jump into historic movie box office bombs. So all of that is coming up on the show, and we encourage you to join us. I want to encourage you to join us at the Nick DiGilio Film Club next Tuesday, the 7th, May 7th, week from Tuesday, to see the classic Alfred Hitchcock thriller, one of his most entertaining, one of his best movies ever, on the big screen in fantastic VistaVision Technicolor, North by Northwest with Cary Grant. A great, great, great movie that I am so excited to see on the big screen. I've never seen it on the big screen before, and I'm beyond excited to see it. It's one of Hitchcock's most entertaining, one of his best thrillers, and you very rarely get to see it on the big screen. So you need to come out to the AMC Rosemont 18 on Tuesday, May 7th, starts at 8 o'clock, and see it on the big screen. We had a lot of people come out for Man Who Knew Too Much, watching classic Hitchcock on the big screen, and this one very rarely gets shown as well. And this is one of people's favorites. You know, if you were to poll people, North by Northwest would be very near the top of people's favorites, Hitchcock movies. It's just so fantastic and so iconic. And it has all the great Hitchcock themes, you know, Innocent Man, Wrongly Accused, and it's got all those great iconic suspense sequences, the dust cropper, Mount Rushmore. It's kind of like Alfred Hitchcock's greatest hits album. It really is. And to see it on the big screen with the digitally remastered, with the incredible sound on the giant screen that we have at the Premier Theater on the second floor at AMC Rosemont 18, it's going to be real special. It's only $10 to get in. $10 to get in to see one of the greatest thrillers ever, Hitchcock classic, on the big screen. It starts at 8. I will introduce it, and then afterwards we'll have a little talk, as we always do. I'll give you some behind-the-scenes stories about it, and we'll just chat about the movies and about Hitchcock in general. And it's going to be a great night. It's only $10, and again, parking is free. And if you want to get to Rosemont a little bit early, go down the street to the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, where they have fantastic food. It's a wonderful place, great service, great management, and terrific food. And they're offering the film clubbers a deal. 15% off all of your food purchases. So, and just say, hey, I'm going to see North by Northwest. Show them proof, you know, your ticket or your computer or whatever, your phone, and show them that you ordered tickets, and all of your food will be 15% off. So go in, Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant, which is right down the street at the Crown Plaza Hotel. Get your 15% off dinner, have some drinks, and then jog over to the AMC Rosemont 18. The movie will start at 8, and we will watch Alfred Hitchcock's North by Northwest on the big screen. So go to amctheaters.com right now. Reserve your seats. Get them in there now. amctheaters.com. Reserve your seats for North by Northwest for Tuesday, May 7th. A rare opportunity to see a classic Hitchcock movie on the big screen. $10, parking free. Again, amctheaters.com. Get your seats now. And all right, there you go. We got a break here. We got the news. And when we come back, how is the ideal way to butter your movie theater popcorn? And we'll talk about other life hacks that we can help out with. All right, news is up after this. Yeah. Triple Play Thursday, everybody. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. And that, of course, is Cream. And we got one more Cream song to hear to fill out that Triple Play for Triple Play Thursday. You want to get your requests in. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiCilio here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Alrighty then. So, we're back. And we're going to be talking about, common everyday things that we've kind of been doing wrong, and we're going to give you some life hacks here. Some of these I've heard before, but we're going to talk about them some more. And if you guys have some life hacks that you want to share, we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. So, all right, now, Tom, you worked in a movie theater for some time.
Yeah, for a little over 2 years.
And at the beautiful 400 Theater in Rogers Park.
Mm-hmm.
A wonderful job reopening that place and updating it and all that cool stuff. You know what's also great about it, that you know, is that you can see first-run movies there a lot cheaper than you will at, like, a chain theater.
Literally the cheapest ticket for a first-run movie in the entirety of Chicago.
Yeah.
In the entirety of the city of Chicago.
Yeah, and it's a great theater.
Yeah, been open since 1912.
Yeah, yeah, so a lot of history there. But you worked there for a while, and you're
yes,
familiar
sir.
With the concession stands and popcorn and all that stuff.
All too familiar.
And we all have, you know, we go to movies. I mean, I go to several movies a week. And I'm one of those guys, though, that I'm not a big eater at movie theaters.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that doesn't make movie theater managers happy, because that's where they really make their money.
Yes.
They totally make their money on the popcorn and the candy and the
True.
Soda and all that stuff. But I don't really. When I was younger, I ate more popcorn. When I was when I was married, my ex-wife was a big popcorn fan, and so mm-hmm. she would get that, and I would nibble on it during the
sure.
during the movie. But it's not one of the things. And I know I see people. Everybody does. And I'm often, you know, when I go to the movies, I'm often astonished by, like, families that have, like, tons of food and hot dogs and pizza. And and I'm thinking to myself, how much money are you dropping?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a lot of money.
It really is. Even at a theater like us, where it's literally, we're giving you the best price on anything, people will come in and a family of five will spend easily, like, $60 just on concessions.
There's no question about it. And I see it all the time, you know, like, I just kind of go, my God. I mean, the giant popcorn, the two big pops, you've got, like, your hot dogs and your pizza and like, candy and stuff.
That's what really dumbfounds me, is, like, how much people are really into hot food at the theater now.
Yeah.
Like, if they, we used to have people come and they'd be like, do you guys have soft pretzels? Like, no. Do you see a pretzel machine anywhere?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I was kind about it. No, sorry. And they'd be kind of disappointed.
Yeah.
They'd be like,
right, well,
I mean,
now they've got all these dine-in theaters now
right.
and all that stuff. And, AMC offers, you know, chicken nuggets and wings and all kinds, you know.
Yeah, they got a dine-in theater right down the street.
Yeah. And so so it's a thing now, you know.
Totally.
But the staple, you know, that everybody goes to, if you do indeed go to the movies and snack, it's popcorn,
it's
obviously.
Popcorn.
That's the one go-to that everybody eats. I don't know anybody who doesn't, if they want a snack, the number one thing on the list would be buttered popcorn. So the question is, what's the ideal way to butter movie theater popcorn?
And there is a right answer.
Okay. Now, I have this article, and this was from The Takeout, right? TheTakeout.com. So let's read from this and find out. Now, if you guys have a certain way of doing it yourself, and now it used to be, you know, years ago, you didn't butter your own popcorn. The person behind the counter did it.
Right.
They did not have the butter station.
Yeah.
For the public. But now, you know, you get the popcorn, they just hand it to you, and you go over to the station and butter it up. So that wasn't the case before. So when you enter any movie theater worth its salt, nice.
Boo.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. There are a few things that you expect: a comfortable, appropriately high-backed chair mounted at a slight incline for your viewing ease, posters lining the walls, heralding features yet to come. Perhaps most of all, you expect to be greeted by the divine aromas of butter, salt, and the popcorn they both serve to enhance. Which is the case when you go to a movie theater. However, upon purchase, you now face an impossible choice. How to butter the popcorn in the way that best preserves its integrity. Do you request that the bag or bucket have a layer of butter halfway through and then again on top? Do you go one and done with the generous upper layer? Do you surrender to the hedonistic delights of what Stephen King and many others affectionately refer to as the heavy bag, the quote-unquote heavy bag? Such heady questions call for informed answers, and in that spirit, the takeout consulted with the experts on what works best. While several different butter dispenser distributors did not return our calls. They're just too busy, the butter dispenser distributors. They're just too busy. They don't have time to take phone calls.
Should have buttered them up a little.
Oh, come on, Henny Youngman Juice. The takeout was able to chat with two independent theater managers about this crucial question. One of them is your colleague, am I right?
Yeah, my former assistant general manager, Jake Weissman.
Uh-huh.
Who is truly a butter professional. That man knows how to butter corn.
Okay. All right. Well, first we talk with Kyle Cubber, who is the operations manager at Chicago's famed Music Box Theater. They weighed in on the value of even butter dispersal. By the way, at the Music Box Theater, that's real butter.
Yeah, that is.
Let me tell you yeah. something. I used to work at the Jewel across the street from Music Box. Not the one that's there now, but the teeny one that only had 12 aisles years ago. That's a remodel. That's a whole new building. It wasn't always like that. They had an outdoor parking lot and a much smaller store.
Okay.
And that's when I worked there. That was years ago. But the guys at the Music Box, I was a dairy manager. I worked in the dairy department. The guys at the Music Box would come in and just take all my butter. They would come in. I'm not kidding. They would come in and they would take, and I'd have to order extra butter because of the Music Box. They would come in and just take the stick, but the four packs of stick butter, and just load up a grocery cart with them.
So that's the thing that confuses me, is that wouldn't they just get, like, I don't know, industrial size?
You would think. I don't know if they still do that now.
Yeah.
If they go across the street to the Jewels, you know, and
I'm sure
get butter.
To pinch.
but they did it all the time when I was. It was a regular visit from the guys at the Music Box. They would come in with a shopping cart and just clear out my shelf of butter, and I'd have to put more butter on the shelf because they would clear it out. So they would go across this. They would crawl across the street, grab real butter, sticks of butter, and that's what they were putting on the popcorn.
That's remarkable.
Yeah. Now I don't know if that's the same, but I know that at the Music Box, it's real, and they still use real butter.
There's still real butter. People.
Yeah, still okay. Real butter. No question about it. Anyway. Kyle says, who is the operations manager at the Music Box, I've always been a fan of scooping half of it into a bag, then you run butter over it, and then you shake it up a bit so it helps disperse it amongst the popcorn, he suggests. Then you hit it with a layer of butter on top and do your best to shake it again, though there are certain limitations before it spills out. Okay. That's a technique that I have used in the past, is the halfway, you know, put the butter in there and then load it up again and then put the butter on top. I've done that before. And you salt the middle part too.
You salt it.
Salt the middle part as well. One of my friends just takes the salt shaker into the theater with him.
Now, okay. So that was a nightmare for me, because people would steal especially the flavored ones, because we had like ranch, caramel corn, whatever. I swear to God, at least every other week. No, every other week I'd go in there, some jerk. It's got the whole thing of ranch. It's not yours.
I understand. But it's funny because my friend would, I don't think he ever did it with the flavored ones, because some theaters don't offer.
They don't do the flavored most. If you took the regular salt.
The one at the Landmark Century, they offer the flavored. The flavored
salt. They'll do that.
Salt. And those things are big. Those are bigger than like a regular little salt shaker.
Yeah.
You know, the flavored ones come in a bigger container.
Mm-hmm.
They take that?
Yeah, no, they were huge. They would take these huge containers, and they thought we wouldn't notice. I literally once went in there before, I think it was before Bohemian Rhapsody started.
Yeah.
Because I looked over, and I'm just like, where's my ranch? Where's my ranch flavoring? And I go in there.
Those jerk Queen fans.
Yeah. No, I go in there. There's a guy sitting in the back of the theater just...
Oh, it's crazy.
I swear to God, he should have been snorting it.
My friend, though, would take it because, like, what do you get? You get, you know, you get like a third of the way through, and the salt's gone.
Oh, yeah.
So he'd have the salt sitting next to him and just put it out. But he would always bring it back. So he'd bring it back to the station he took it from, but he did keep it during the course of the movie.
When it's the regular salt, we got seven, you know, dispensers for that. If they took one, it's not that big a deal.
Right.
And if they bring it back, okay, it's not great, but whatever. I prefer if someone literally went to the Jewels and got a thing of Morton salt and just brought it in themselves.
Yeah.
If they're that tied to the salt.
Yeah. Then again, Cooper likes, or also acknowledged there's a method for all tastes. There is a woman that comes here frequently, and she asked for it in seven layers. So we have to take what I stated earlier, break it down like it's a taco dip. So we fill it up, a seventh of the bag, butter it, add more, add more, add more. She loves it. Certain people ask for extra butter, heavy butter, and that way they can enjoy it that way. Now, much of the deliberation usually comes down to what one prioritizes in their popcorn. It could be the crunchy kernel flake snap of the low-fuss bag or the mushy mess of saturation and attempt to marry the two. There are even those who like to make a big bag of all their snacks at one time and add their candy to the mix. That's a thing. I have to say that I didn't know that was a thing until I saw Whiplash.
Oh, yeah.
I swear to God.
Paul Reiser putting the
raisinettes in there. I was like, what? You know, and then I mentioned it on the air. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. You know, the character, Paul Reiser, you know, plays Miles Teller's dad in the movie, and he puts raisinettes in the popcorn, and people called in and went, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, raisinettes, Milk Duds.
Yeah, people love it. And I seriously didn't know it was a thing. I'm watching Whiplash. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with Paul Reiser? So, however, the industry opinion would seem that the more layers you can have added for you up front, the better. Jake Wiseman, there you go. Assistant General Manager at the New 400, one of Chicago's stalwart neighborhood theaters, also concurs here. Given that the 400's been around since 1912, they should know a thing or two. There's such a thing as overdoing it. I had someone who used to work here who lovingly buttered every single kernel. I had to be like, was that you?
No, that was definitely not me, but I think I know who it was.
Okay. I had to be like, you have to stop. I love you, but you need to stop. But definitely, if it's a medium, you have to layer it. If it's a large, you have to layer it. You need to layer it. Otherwise, it's just a mess. Weissman also suggested that the vast majority of moviegoers, roughly 90% by his estimation, prefers layers over the top drizzling. This is my advice for anyone who works in a movie theater and slings popcorn. If it's a medium or larger, just do yourself a favor. Half it and just layer it. Do yourself a favor. Don't wait for someone to ask for it. It's silly, but that's right. Just because you go to an AMC and get a large popcorn, it's already full. People want to get it in there, and they don't just want the top surface. So there it is.
That's 100%
right. It's the layering, right?
It's 100% the layering.
All right. Now, they mention here, I'm just looking at this, that they mention this other thing that I've seen people do, and we'll talk about it when we get back. How do you guys, if you want to jump in here, we're going to talk about life hacks and things that we do in our everyday life that we're kind of doing wrong, and I also want to hear from you guys on how you butter your popcorn. Do you layer it? Do you just dump it on top? And there's another trick that's mentioned here that I've actually done, and I saw somebody do it at the AMC River East, and I was like, what the hell are you doing? And she told me all about it, but we'll get to that in a second. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200.
Thinking about the times you drove in my car. Thinking that I might have drove you too far.
Badge, it's my favorite Cream song.
Great track.
Yeah. Also played at the beginning of Fandango, the Kevin Costner motion picture directed by Kevin Reynolds. One of my favorite movies of all time. That movie begins and ends with Clapton. The song at the beginning and the song at the end are both Clapton. Cream at the beginning with Badge.
Mm-hmm.
Blind Faith with Can't Find My Way Back Home at the end.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm a big Blind Faith fan.
Yeah.
I like Blind Faith.
Oh, yeah. That soundtrack, by the way, is all good for Fandango. Have you seen Fandango?
I know of it.
You got to see it, man. Mm-hmm. It's great. Do you know my list of the five best guy movies?
I don't.
Oh, okay. I have by the way, coming up, the stories that matter, I got to get this in, with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I have a list of the quintessential, my favorite quintessential guy movies. And I don't mean like Terminator and, you know, that kind of stuff. Guy movies, yeah, stuff we shoot and blow stuff up. I'm talking about movies about guys, you know, about the behavior of guys. And Fandango is on that list. It's one of the five best movies about guys ever.
Can I take a shot in the dark at one of them?
Yeah, sure.
Cool Hand Luke.
No.
Really?
No. I'm more specific, like the buddies and friends and stuff, not like Prisoners. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like the
Hey, man, Prisoners are good.
No,
you know.
I know, and it's a great movie, and it's a great guy movie, no question about it.
Sweatiest movie ever made.
It is the sweatiest movie ever. Do you remember the episode of Cheers?
Yeah.
Where they talk about the sweatiest movie ever made, and somebody mentions Body Heat, and Ted Danson's in Body Heat.
Yeah.
So it was this weird, insane meta thing where Sam Malone is talking about Body Heat, and he's in it. So anyway, Fandango, Diner.
Yeah.
Beautiful Girls.
Okay.
You know that one, Matt?
I do, yeah.
Matt Damon and, not Matt Damon, Matt Dillon.
Matt Dillon. Yeah.
Timothy Hutton, Michael Rappaport. Great movie.
Yeah, that's a choice. That's good.
Breaking Away.
Mm.
Have you seen Breaking Away?
Yes, I have.
Okay. And Hanging with the Homeboys, which is a great movie with a horrible title.
Yeah, that's, I remember you mentioned that when we had the guys from Odd Obsession. Because that's, is that the one?
It's the one in the Bronx. It takes place in the Bronx. Well, it takes place in Manhattan and the Bronx. But the guys are from the Bronx and they go to Manhattan.
I got to track it down.
It's a great movie. Those are my five guy movies. So it's Fandango, Beautiful Girls, Diner, Breaking Away, Hanging with the Homeboys. So, all right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How do you butter your popcorn? We've been talking about different ways and the most, I guess the best way is to layer it. Layer upon layer, layer butter, layer butter, layer butter. Then you'll get even distribution. But there are a few other ways. When pressed about the self-administered butter with the DIY dispensers that you get at the AMC where they fill the whole bag full, there are other things that you can do. Now, this is the trick that I saw someone do. A woman was standing next to me. I was getting popcorn, and I was about to butter my popcorn, and I saw a woman take a straw. They call it the straw trick. Take a straw and stick it into the middle of the bag and push it down and then attach the nozzle of the butter to the straw and it goes all the way down into the bag. So you can just, instead of like, if when you get those full bags, you can't layer up because, you know, they've already given it to you full.
Right.
Get a straw, stick it into the middle all the way down, push it all the way down to the bottom and then stick that, and the straw fits right over, the nozzle fits right into the straw, and then hit the butter and then slowly lift the straw up a little bit more. And then hit the butter again, so you're layering it internally. And it works.
That's genius.
It works.
That's absolutely genius.
And then some people get their own, like, cups of butter. Well, they get a free cup.
Yeah,
and then they fill, so they have the butter with them sitting next to them in the theater.
I've done that on a couple of occasions.
But I've done the straw trick works, man. It does.
It doesn't just make it too bottom heavy?
No.
It comes up?
It depends on how, for some reason, I mean, it distributes itself. I don't know how the hell it does it, but it does it. So the straw trick, and I thought the lady was nuts. I thought she was crazy. And she's like, look, just try it. I mean, it looks weird. I look like a weirdo doing this, having a straw stuck into the butter dispenser. But it works, and it does work. The straw trick works.
I feel like that was a pretty magic moment. Like, you try it, and then you're like, hey, thanks. And she's just gone. Like,
she was gone. Never there. Yeah, she was like an angel of some kind. So there you go. Someone has sent in a text that says... 630 area code says, I bring my own Tabasco and limes for my popcorn. That's how I like it. No butter.
Honestly, I'm here for the spicy popcorn. I like to put jalapenos on mine.
Do you? Oh, yeah. You
can put the spicy jalapenos.
Well, they got the jalapenos right there. They're supposed to be for, you know, the nachos. But you can throw them right on the pot. I've done that. My ex-wife, Heather, who was the big popcorn fanatic, would put the jalapenos, like she would group them up and put them on the side of the bag. So that they wouldn't distribute all over the place if you didn't want a hot bite.
Mm-hmm.
But then that way you can just pick them up and do it that way. But the layering, now, did you work the popcorn?
All the time. I was a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
When I did the popcorn, I did exactly what Jake said. You know, I would layer, I would scoop butter. And the thing was, is that the salt was at a salt station. So if they wanted
unless it was stolen.
Oh my God. I love you, Roger Spark, but come on, do me a favor. But if they specifically wanted it salted, they would have to go get the salt, but then I would bring it back. And they would do it themselves. I would be like, salt to taste.
Yeah.
And then scoop, butter. But the toughest guy I ever had, and he was a great customer, one of my favorites, total regular. He had this thing where he didn't like if you tamped down the popcorn. Now, my natural instinct would be to scoop.
Yeah.
Scoop and then tamp down the top a little bit. It's not falling all over the place.
Yeah.
But he didn't like that, not one bit. So you would have to scoop very gingerly and let it just kind of fall where it was. Butter.
Yeah.
Scoop gingerly. Butter. He would do a three layer.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, it was a point of community. When you got to know people, you knew their popcorn order.
Right.
And you had it ready for them when they walked in.
Right.
And
well, that's nice about a neighborhood theater. Can do that, because when you go to a chain, nobody knows, nobody remembers who you are.
Yeah, and it's the pre-filled.
Yeah,
I don't like that.
And it's all sitting there. It's under.
Stale is
when
that?
When you go, at least the theater that we go to, my folks and I go every Saturday. I mean, I go to a lot of movie theaters, but the one that we go to on a regular basis is the Village Crossing in Skokie. That's an AMC,
right?
Because they have a Dolby theater, they have an IMAX theater, so you can.
It's like, the full package.
Like we're seeing Avengers on Saturday, full on IMAX 3D.
Boom.
You know, because that's the way I want to see it.
Yeah.
And you can see it in Skokie. It's really nice. You don't have to go all the way down to Navy Pier or someplace crazy. You can see it. So they have all the popcorn is already there. It's already pre-bagged. There's like 20, 25 bags that are already full of different sizes, and they're under heat lamps. So you just go grab it off the shelf, and then you bring it up to the cashier. They ring it up, and then you go over to the station and put your butter and your salt on it. So there's, you know, I mean, I rarely see people at that theater actually bagging the popcorn.
Really?
They're like in the back or something.
And, maybe they just pull off a popcorn tree, pre-bag.
And it's already full. Like you walk up, you don't wait for it, you don't order the popcorn, you just walk up, grab it, self-serve, and get in line. That's how they do it, at least that's how they do it in Skokie.
I see the appeal of that.
Yeah.
But I like to know that the popcorn is fresh.
I do,
too. A lot of people at the 400, they would ask us, they'd be like, how frequently is this popped? And we would usually pop it every round, you know,
I'll tell
as
you,
it were.
I will say this. The two places, because I haven't been to the 400 in a very long time. I haven't been to the 400 since it became the new 400. It's been a long time.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a long time. But the two theaters where I always thought the popcorn was outstanding, Music Box. Always hot, fresh butter, real butter, always good. And the Davis.
Davis has great corn.
The Davis has great corn. And you know, I haven't been to the Logan in a long time, but the Logan used to have fantastic corn, too.
Yeah.
Before it got all fancy, you know, before the Logan became, like, all fancy.
Right.
But their popcorn was great. My ex, who was the popcorn fanatic I'm telling you about, we used to live in Albany Park, and sometimes we'd go out or something, and then on the drive home, she's like, I'm going to stop off at the Davis.
And just get the corn.
And get in, get the corn,
all
get
the time.
Out.
Independent theater corn is always the best corn.
Always. Yeah, no question about it. All right, well, now we all know how to butter it, and I hope some people try the straw trick, because it worked for me. I did it several times, and I want to thank that mysterious young lady for helping me. All right, we got a bunch of other life hacks here that we're going to talk about. You've been doing some stuff wrong. We all have. And we're going to discuss that after the news, which is next. In the corner of my eye, I saw you in Moody's. You were very high. You were high. It was a crying disgrace. Welcome back. Tom, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there are only two types of people in this world. People that like Steely Dan and people that don't like Steely Dan. I happen to be in the like category. In fact,
good.
Love.
Oh, thank God.
I love Steely Dan.
Steely Dan's great.
I love the Dan. I don't understand. I mean, I guess I can understand why people, but the thing is, there's no middle ground on Steely Dan. Like,
no,
you either
really
you either love him or really, really like him, or you can't stand him.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people who hate Steely Dan.
You know who used to play with the guys from Steely Dan?
Hmm.
Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
Yes,
back
that's
in,
right.
When they were in college.
That's right. I forgot about that. The Dan. So, Walter Becker. God bless him.
I know. Some of the most talented musicians of that era.
By the way, we're back. It's the Allstate Skyline Studios. Nick DiGilio. We're here until 5, and we're about to talk about some life hacks to help you out. Things we've been doing wrong on a daily basis, and we're going to give you some hacks on how to do them better and do them correctly. But the Dan, I got into them when I was a kid, and I just I've loved them ever since. And the thing about Steely Dan is not only they, you know, do they only have, like, first of all, the two of those guys, incredible. But they would only have the greatest studio musicians that you could possibly have. And The Steely Dan records sound so good. They are so incredibly well produced and just pristine in terms of the sound of those songs. And that's one of the problems that people have with it, because they every time I talk about Steely Dan or we get in a conversation, the people who don't like Steely Dan use the word soulless, cold and soulless, which I don't agree with at all. But I love who requested the trip to play Steely Dan.
That was our good friend Pat.
Pat, all right, Pat, you got good taste. Yeah. Oh man, I love the Steely Dan. You know, there was that period of time when they didn't tour. You know, but they weren't really a touring band. They were more of a studio band. They very rarely played out. So this is a true story. I've told this story on the air before. I know you don't know. Back in, like, I guess when it was 1993 or something. And the Dan had not toured. They had not played live in, I mean, decades. Probably a couple of years. But like 20 years, maybe. 15, 20 years at least. So there was this thing called the Rock and Soul Review. Which was headlined by a bunch of different... It was a review. So like Boss Skaggs was in it and a whole bunch of other... that kind of middle of the road kind of rock and roll kind of stuff, and that's what it was. And it was an all day thing. And Becker and Fagan were on the bill. So my friend and I were like, well, I mean, I don't know if they're going to play any Dan songs because it's like this review, and they were doing sort of like soul classics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was just the idea was to have these incredible Ringo's All Star Band. You know, it's like having all of these incredible musicians on stage at the same time, maybe not necessarily playing their own songs, that kind of thing. So we had my friend and I, big Steely Dan fans. We were big Steely Dan fans. We're like, it'll be cool to see these guys on stage. Maybe they'll play a Steely Dan song. Because they hadn't. They hadn't played together in a long time. This was at Poplar Creek in Hoffman Estates. So we go, and the place is pretty much packed. And it's all, it was mostly guys. It was mostly like men in their 30s at that time, or middle-aged, even a little bit older.
Couple of kids.
That's the target audience, you know, for Steely. I mean, I was in my late 20s at that time, but the audience was like, there wasn't anybody who was like under 25 in the audience, and there were not many women. So the other people are playing. Boz Skaggs is playing. I can't remember who else was on the bill, but other people are playing, and all of a sudden they come out. So Fagan and Becker come out, and they bust into, they say hello and everything, and they bust into Deacon Blues. Okay, so the place goes nuts, and like it was transformative. I swear to God, we everybody was standing, and they started playing Deacon Blues, and we just were mesmerized by it. They play the song, and like grown men are crying because they're playing Deacon Blues. Like we were crying. Like, there was a river of tears drowning Hoffman Estates that was coming straight from... It was man tears all over the... everything in the surrounding area turned to man mud. You know what I mean? Oh, that's going to be on Friday's show.
There you go.
So we're all, like, crying, and I'm not exaggerating. They played Deacon Blues, and it was... this is not an exaggeration. It was a six-minute ovation. It was a... People would not stop clapping. People would not stop cheering. Like, because nobody saw that live, and it's their best song. It's one of the greatest songs ever written, and that's what they came out and said, yeah, here's Deacon Blues. We're like, it was just this overwhelming experience. A bunch of guys in Hoffman Estates, like, looking at each other and hugging and crying, like, it's Deacon Blues! Oh, my God! So, and then they got back together because they were like, after that tour, because they did this, you know, Rock and Soul review, and they were like, well, hell, I guess there's people out there that want to see us.
Jeez, how do you follow that up?
I mean, they did do back, you know, they did do My Old School. They did a few other songs. But to start with Deacon Blues, like, that's, jeez, they single-handedly almost killed 20,000 men. Because of that, they were just like wandering around, bumping into things because they're crying. You can't see. Like, that was Deacon Blues. My God, my life will never be the same.
Oh, wow.
So, one of my favorite concert moments of all time.
I can only imagine.
Was just when, I mean, because, and I'm seriously, man, I'm not exactly, it was like a 6-minute ovation.
I believe it.
Like, nobody stopped. Everybody was like, you know, we can't stop crying. We can't stop crying and clapping right now, so put up with it. But anyway, so I happen to like Steely Dan a little.
A little.
Just a little. Oh, man. All right. By the way, it was mentioned during the updates on the podcast, but I want to talk about your podcast, No Coast Cinema.
Yeah.
What's going on with that? Tell everybody about the latest.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, this most recent one, which you can listen to right now on WGM Plus, we talked to Ashley Thompson, who is a fantastic director and editor, who has a short that is playing sold out, unfortunately, tonight at the Logan Theater, called I Miss Jamie When She's Gone. It's fantastic. She's a first-time director, and I've never seen a debut short like that before.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's really, really cool. So hopefully it'll be getting a little bit of a wider release, but they're going to be showing it at the Logan tonight.
And she's local? She's local?
Yeah, she's local. She's originally from, oh, man, and I messed this up on the show at first. I can't remember. It's one of the Northwest suburbs. I want to say Naperville.
Okay.
It's Northwest suburbs. That's all that matters. And the
Naperville is in the Northwest suburbs.
Yeah.
So you're close.
Close at the very least. So, but it's the whole short itself revolves around, two sisters dealing with their mom, and it's very suburban Chicago style of story. And, anybody who grew up in the suburbs would recognize a lot of the things going on in it. And it's a really great short.
So that podcast is available now, and that's
right now
with Ashley Thompson.
Yeah. Yes, right now.
And what's another one? The last one you did before that? You remember?
Oh, yeah. Before that, we talked to Matt Weinstein and a couple of the stars of his new feature. Or it's somewhere between a short and a feature. It's a little bit in a strange length, but it's called A Missed Connection, which is a really interesting story for folks. They can probably recognize a lot of the themes going on, and it's just two people that knew each other a while ago, and they reconnect at a coffee shop and realize that they had crushes on each other back in the day, and they talk about that, and they kind of realize that things have changed quite a bit from when they were young.
All right, that's available too, and you can subscribe.
Yeah, you can totally subscribe. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find it there.
It's No Coast Cinema.
Yeah,
very cool. All right, I just wanted to get the word out on that. All right. So we have some life hacks that we're going to talk about. We were talking about giving you a little hint on how you can butter your popcorn. You got to layer it. That's probably the best way, is to layer it. But if you're at one of those complex cineplexes, or as my friend used to say, plexus, which is just a made up word. he made that up on stage one night in a play that we were doing. I was in a play that I co-wrote and directed called Win Place or Show. And it was a sequel to a play that I did called Alive, which I've talked to you about before. It was a sequel. We brought the characters back, added some new ones, and it was just a bunch of guys at the track. We were at Arlington, and it's just it was like Bleacher Bums, but at Arlington, and it was just guys swearing and telling penis jokes. It was just guys at the track, and a lot of improvisation. I was very loose with it was a different show every night. We were screwing around a lot on stage, and people really loved the show. And one of the guys actually wins a bunch of money, and we go to the teller, and the teller was this snooty jerk played by Sean Abley, and he was like making fun of us and wouldn't like, and so at one point he wants to get his money, and so we're waiting for him so they show him pulling counting the money out, And my buddy who won is going, come on, man, let's go. Give me some 20s, man. Give me some 20s. Yeah, yeah. And then all of a sudden he starts pulling out ones. And he's like slowly putting $1 bills down just to piss us off, it's to take forever, maybe miss the next race. So he's like, wait a minute. What the hell's going on here? And so then what we also did was, like, at one point I fade the lights down. And then we fade the lights back up, and as though time has passed, and he's still slowly putting the 20s down. And so at one point he goes, are you telling me, at one night he says, are you telling me that you don't have one single 20 in this entire plexus? And he just like said the word on stage, and we all lost it. And so plexus became a word that we began using.
Plexus.
Are you telling me that you don't have an entire, and he was based on my friend Joe. The character that he was playing was based on my friend Joe. Oh, yeah, Heaven and Earth was a real treat, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're telling me you don't have a whole 20, and one single 20 in this entire plexus? So anyway, if you go to the plexus, try the straw trick. All right. So here are things that we're doing wrong. These are some life hacks that we're doing wrong. Like, for instance, you're throwing your shopping bags into the shopping cart. Shouldn't do that. The right way to do it is look for the little tabs on the cart. They're right behind the kid's seat. You can actually hang your bags off of them and really optimize the space inside your cart as you're wheeling it out to your car. And they're, I mean, I'm looking at the pictures of it, and that's absolutely right. You can hang at least three or four bags off of the back of that seat, the child's seat, and there's at least two or three of those hoops that you can hang them from. It gives you more room in the cart. Now, here's one that we've talked about before. You're eating your cupcake right side up. So this is a mistake. So, like, you bite into it, you get frosting all over your face, and it falls off, and you get, you know what I mean? So what they say is, to avoid a mess, tear the top half of the cupcake off and stick the bottom bit of cake on top. So now you've got, like, a tiny little cupcake sandwich, and you won't get frosting all over your lips and nose, or in my case, in my mustache.
Okay.
And it looks like a little cupcake sandwich. So you take the bottom part off, put it on top, and then you have like a little, you basically have like a frosting sandwich.
Okay.
And it works. It totally works. And I know a lot of people have done that. We talked about it on the air before, and they're like, that's how you got to eat a cupcake. Dan Shagrew, my old producer, swore by that. Swore by it. Said that's the only way you eat a cupcake.
Well, I'm a damn fool, because I leave the bottom part behind. I just eat the top. It's like the episode
just the
from
frosting?
Science. Well,
just the frosting? You just eat the frosting?
Kind of, and then a little bit of cake.
All right.
I'm a big fan of frosting.
All right. Well, clearly. All right. By the way, if you guys have any life hacks or tricks that you want to share with us, 312-981-7200, what are we doing wrong? Hang those bags from the back of that seat in your shopping cart. You'll have more room. And cut your cake in half and put the bottom half of the cupcake on top of the frosting, and then you got a little sandwich, and it won't get all over your face. We've got more of these things. In fact, how to hold your burger correctly. We'll talk about that. But we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 with life hacks. Talk or text with your suggestions as well.
Katie tried. I was halfway crucified. I was on the other side of no tomorrow. You walked in,
yeah.
And my life beat.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Allstate Skyline Studio is where we are, and we're here until 5 o'clock. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! And that's the second of our Triple Play of Steely Dan. And our phone number is 312-981-7200 if you would like to join us or make a Triple Play Thursday request. We are talking about things that we've been doing wrong, like throwing your shopping bags in a shopping cart when you can hang them off the little hooks that are in the shopping cart. And you can rip your cupcake in half and put the bottom half on top of the frosting so that none of the frosting gets all over your face and lips and nose. And now a lot of people eat their burger with one hand, which is wrong. The absolute correct way to do it is your thumbs and your pinkies belong on the bottom of the burger. Your thumbs and your pinkies belong on the bottom of the burger. So that way you've got your pinkies pressing against the, pressing against the bottom of the burger and your thumbs pressing against the bottom of the burger. And then the other three fingers are on top. And then that way, none of the toppings will fall off. So you've got a burger with a bunch of those toppings, there you go. Don't eat it with one hand. Put those thumbs and pinkies underneath on the bottom.
Have some self-respect. Eat it fancy.
Yeah, exactly. Cutting your bread like a loaf of bread, cutting the loaf of bread from top to bottom is a mistake. Turn your bread upside down before you slice it. It gives you a larger and more an even cutting surface. That makes sense because it's flat and it's larger. And the knife can go through a lot easier. So turn your loaf of bread over if you're going to slice it. A couple of texts have come in. If you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're talking about some life hacks and some other things that we've probably been doing a little bit wrong here. And some advice. 262 area code says, I got a new blue car and named it Deacon Blues. All right. 847 area code says, I heard one hack about using a Ziploc bag filled with hot water to get the frost off your windshield. I tried it, and it works, but it seems like it's more trouble than it's worth.
Hmm. Do you put it, like, on top, on the outside?
I would imagine that you take the Ziploc bag sealed with the hot water in it and rub it on the on the windshield.
Yeah.
That would be that would be sense. That would be my guess.
Okay.
So, okay. Okay. How about this one? Putting your straw in the into the pop can right into the opening, which you don't do, because there's the tab that you open the can with. If you turn that around. If you turn that tab around and over the opening of the can, you can stick this straw right in there and it stays still. It doesn't bop around back and forth. That tab will hold it.
Although I do have to ask, how many people are realistically drinking out of a pop can with a straw?
Maybe some people, some germ-phobia kind of people.
I can see that.
You know, I mean, I don't.
I go straight from the can.
Yeah, I mean, I don't drink pop really, But you know, when I did, or if I used to drink it, well, who the hell's going to drink beer with a straw? Nobody's going to drink beer.
That's what you think.
Yeah, a lot of straw drinkers out there. All right, how about this? You ever eat Toblerone?
From time to time, when I make my way back from an airport.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, sure. Duty free. You're breaking your pieces of a Toblerone outward. Away from the other pieces, when it's designed for you to press the piece against the last one, so it's easier and neater to snap the piece in toward the other pieces, and that's actually how the bar was designed. It's much easier just press boom and it snaps off, but press it towards the piece behind it instead of away, and it comes off better. So next time you're having a Toblerone, all you fancy people out there, you press the piece against the one behind it, and that's how you break off the Toblerone. All right, I think we have another call here with a life hack for us. And here's Robert on WGN. Hi, Robert.
Morning, Nicholas. You have problems with a perfect baked potato in a microwave.
Uh-huh.
So what you do is you take four baked potatoes. Okay, medium size. You smother them with olive oil. You rub the olive oil into your baked potato.
Well, it's not baked. Hold on a second. It's not baked yet, Robert, right? It's just a regular potato, right?
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. So okay. You take your regular potato.
Yeah, yeah.
You rub olive oil into it really well.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is with the skins on, obviously. Duh. And then you put it in the microwave for 4 minutes. On high, flip them, and then after you flip them, another 4 minutes, and they come out perfect.
So slather them in olive oil, 4 minutes, flip them, 4 minutes, perfect baked potato.
So you got 2 4-minute cycles, 1 4-minute,
right.
Flip them, another 4 minutes, and they come out perfectly. And here's another quick one. Take an egg, crack it. Take a half a cup of water, half a cup. You need a half a cup. Measure it. Half a cup in a glass, preferably a coffee cup. Put a half a cup of water in there. Crack an egg in there. Put a plate over the top of it. Stick it in the microwave for 50 seconds on high, and you have a perfect, you know, egg that's not hard boiled. Or you can do hard boil. Hard boil is 60 seconds.
All right.
But you get a soft-boiled egg if you put it in water. Now, remember, you got to pull the egg out of the water for those people who are stoned right now.
Right.
You got to take the egg out of the water. And there you go for a perfect hard-boiled egg.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
All right. Hey,
all right,
great
take care,
show,
man.
Always,
see
Nicholas. You guys are the best.
All right. Take care, buddy. There you go. Little microwave tips from Robert. All right. We have more life hacks. And, hey, we've been doing this wrong. Here's the right way to do it. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We're also going to be talking about fast food menu items that fast food employees say that you should never, ever, ever order. We'll help you out in that department, too. The news is up after this.
It's my shame, there where I used to stand.
add the sound of 20,000 men crying to the background of this, and that was 1993 at Poplar Creek.
Man,
so great. Steely Dan there for Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200, one artist, three songs. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, and we've been talking about some life hacks and some everyday things that we've been doing wrong, and we should try to do them right. And also, we were also mentioning how to butter your popcorn correctly. So helping you out with some life hacks here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and here is Trucker Rich. Hi, Rich.
Hey, evening, Nick. How's it going?
All right. What's up?
You know how when you make tacos at home with the crunchy shells, how they always get soggy and fall apart and break in two?
Yeah.
You know, and end up on your plate, eat them like a salad?
Yeah.
I do it reverse. I put the lettuce, then the tomatoes, then the cheese, then the meat on top, and it keeps all the stuff together, and it doesn't get soggy and doesn't break through.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that before. I've heard there are other ways. I'm trying to remember. There's another way to avoid, like, the taco falling apart. And you know, the toppings falling out. There was another way that people do it, but that's, you know, that's basically the way is, I think if you put the cheese on the bottom, then that binds everything.
Right.
Right. And then you put the toppings.
If you like beans, you can, spread beans on a soft shell,
right,
and then put that around the outside of the hard shell.
That's right.
Like
that's
a double decker.
Yeah, that's the double decker taco. That's how that started. But because people who like the crunchy tacos, were getting tired of like biting into it, and then the taco would fall apart and break apart and everything. So they spread some beans on a soft tortilla, and then put that on the outside of the taco shell.
Right.
Yeah.
But,
very good.
But if you put the cheese and stuff underneath the meat, even like for little kids, it keeps the lettuce from flying all over when they pick it up too.
Yeah.
So
that's true. All right. Thanks, Rich.
All right. Yep. Have
a good evening,
sir.
See you later. All right. 312-981-7200. And we're talking about, we're doing it wrong. Here are some life hacks for you. How about this one? Put your roll of toilet paper with the free end on the inside. So it should be not, you should not roll the toilet paper from under. You should roll the toilet paper from over. So the flap of the toilet paper should be on the outside, over.
Right. Yeah.
As opposed to against the wall.
Yeah. No, my girlfriend, she just puts it any which way, and it's pretty much the worst thing about her. It's my least favorable personality trait.
It says the free end belongs on the outside of the roll, and they even have the patent. In the patent in 1891, says that that's the correct way to put on a roll of toilet paper. Now, here's the thing, and that is the correct way to put on a roll of toilet paper, unless you have a cat, you know, that likes to claw at toilet paper. If you have it, you know, if you have the loose end against the wall or on the inside as opposed to the outside, which the outside is, in fact, the correct way to do it. But if you got a cat and he starts pawing and clawing at the roll of toilet paper, if it's on the outside, you're going to have toilet paper all over the floor. Like, the roll is just going to go nuts, and you're going to have nothing but torn up piles of toilet paper all over the floor. Whereas if it's the other way, the toilet paper will get torn up because the cat, you know, is going to claw it. But there's not going to be like a 9,000, you know, foot roll of toilet paper laying on your bathroom floor.
Damn cats.
Yeah.
Love them to death.
I do too. They're the best. But that's some advice, and that's from personal experience. Personal experience. There was a period of time where with my two cats were kind of obsessed with messing around with the toilet paper in the bathroom, so I had to put the toilet paper roll on wrong.
Or I would just even put it on the back of the toilet. At that point,
yeah,
just
like that, just not even have it on the roll. Yeah, all right. Here's the thing. You take a wild guess at what side of your gas tank is on every time you pull into a gas station. Well, there's an indicator. It says here that there's an indicator that shows you, you know, what the arrow is. There's an arrow indicator on your speedometer or odometer or speedometer, your speedometer on your dashboard that tells you what side your gas tank is on.
Yeah. I know. When that got pointed out to me, that was a glass shattering.
It is. It's sort of mind blowing. It is sort of mind blowing.
Well, I always used to remember it if it were a domestic car, if it were made in the States, I want to say it was it was always on one side, and if it were imported, it was always on the opposite side.
Yeah, and but you don't remember the days when they were in the back by the trunk, like in the middle of the bumper.
What?
Oh yeah, man. That's where you would flip your license plate down, and underneath would be the gas cap. See, you're too young to remember this, man.
Whose idea was that?
But that's the way it was on all cars at one point. Would you ask Tom Appel, man, next time we have Tom on.
That's the first thing I'm going
to
ask.
It's like it used to be behind the license plate. That's where that's where all the gas tanks used to be. They would be behind the license plate. So when you were filling up with gas, you go back, you'd flip the license plate down, you'd unscrew the cap, and it would be right in the middle of your back bumper, right between the taillights, behind your
that's
license
remarkable.
Plate. That's where it used to, all the cars used to have that.
That's just so foreign to me, I can't even picture it.
Yeah. I don't know when they stopped doing that, but that was still the case when I was driving, because I had a Ford, no, and that was on the side. No, my Escort, the gas tank was on the side. But my 77 Firebird that I had.
Behind the license plate.
Yeah, behind the license plate in the back. The car growing up when I was a kid, my parents' cars, always in the back, behind the license plate, right in the middle.
Oh.
Yeah, you can look it up, man. You could see archival photos of gas tanks that were located behind the license plate. That's where they used to be.
Back in the wild days.
Back in the crazy days, man. Yeah. Yeah. Now, this next one that they does not apply to Chicagoans. This is you hold a piece of pizza flatly in your hand. This applies only to people who eat the inferior New York style police pizza. Because it's that big floppy triangle. If you're just holding it flatly, it's going to drip over and flop over. So what you do is you give the crust a bit of a pinch when you pick it up. So you pinch it together, and then the slice will then stay horizontal with all your toppings staying put and not sliding off. But the other option is not to eat New York style pizza. That would be, I think, the correct option. Now, that's the correct option. And by the way, in Chicago, you don't have to worry about that, because if you're going to eat deep dish pizza, which I'm not the biggest fan of, you use utensils. You'll use a knife and fork if you're eating deep dish. If you're eating regular, normal Chicago-style thin crust cut in squares as God intended, as pizza should be, then you don't have to worry about pinching it or anything like that. So that little tip doesn't apply to people who know how to eat pizza in Chicago. And if you do insist on eating the inferior New York style pizza, then yeah, you got to do the pinch. But you know, the best way to avoid that is to just get tavern style Chicago thin crust cut in squares the way God intended. Or if you insist on having the touristy deep dish, you will probably use utensils. So that one doesn't apply to us. So there you go. We got some texts coming in about some life hacks here. 630 area code says, eating Cheetos with chopsticks so your fingers stay clean.
That's just one more barrier between me and Cheetos.
Yeah, I don't care about that. I don't care about having the...
I hate the Cheeto fingers, though. I'm not a big fan.
I don't care. I love Cheetos so much that I don't care.
If you're going to eat Cheetos, you have to accept that you will get Cheeto fingers.
Well, I dated a girl who loved Cheetos, okay? And she would let the Cheeto dust, like, build up on her fingers so it was, like, thick. And then she would just scrape it off with her teeth and suck on her fingers.
Real charmer.
She's like she's one of the best girls I've ever dated. I loved her.
Oh.
And that was one of, I found it charming. I found it absolutely, made me laugh every single time she did it. Because she would eat Cheetos, we'd be watching something on TV or something, she's chowing down on the Cheetos, and just not wiping her hands at all, like letting it build up. And then like at the very end, that was like her treat at the end of having like a half a bag of Cheetos.
God.
She would like just, it would just be, she Ugh. Would scrape it off with her teeth and enjoy every moment of it.
You know, I'm not going to pretend like I'm the cleanliest, you know, I'm not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do stuff.
Oh, and
like
she was
that,
not a dirty. She was not
no,
filthy
just,
at all.
That's
she had
that
great
one thing.
She had great hygiene. She kept, you know, our apartment was kept in pretty good order, not great. You know what I mean? Like my apartment now could use a dusting. No question about it. I have no dishes. I have no dishes in the sink. My bathroom is okay. I think I need to scrub the tub a little bit. But outside of that, we lived okay, but that was the one thing that she did. It was the one weird thing that she did. And I didn't find it hygienically challenging. I just thought it was kind of funny that she liked to do that. She saved up all the built-up Cheeto dust on her fingers as the final treat. I found that to be kind of endearing, actually, and funny. 708 area code says, life hack, peel a banana from the bottom. You just need to gently squeeze it instead of trying to pry it open from the stem. Now, here's the thing, and that's the correct way. You know what? That's the correct way, really, to peel a banana, is from the bottom. That's the way it's sort of meant to be done. And what's incredible is that if you give a banana to a monkey, they do not peel it from the stem. They peel it from the bottom. That's the natural instinct. And this was, they did like a scientific sort of video study on this about like giving apes and monkeys and chimpanzees bananas and watching them peel it. And it was never from the stem. They would never do it from the top. It was always from the bottom. And so scientifically, they were like, well, clearly, if monkeys are doing it this way, this is the way it should be done. And that's the correct way to peel a banana. So our money well spent on studies. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got more things that we were doing wrong and some more life hacks that might help you out. So, are we? Is this okay? Let me guess at who this triple play is, because are we going Jeff Beck or are we going Rod Stewart?
We're going Rod Stewart.
Oh, okay.
My man, my main man.
For a while, he was great, and then
I've got a thing for him because he's a huge supporter of my favorite soccer team in the whole world.
Oh, who is that?
Celtic FC.
Oh,
in Scotland, in Glasgow.
Okay. All right. And who requested the Rod Stewart triple play?
That was coming to us from Rasko.
Okay, Rasko. Because Jeff Beck plays on that song.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
it's a great collaboration.
And it was actually released as a Jeff Beck single.
Really?
Yeah. It was released as a Jeff Beck single with Rod Stewart as a guest vocalist. Mm-hmm. So that's why I didn't know whether the listener was going Rod Stewart or Jeff Beck.
Oh, we're going full Stewart.
All right. Okay. Hey, how's it going, everybody? We're here until 5 o'clock. Coming up is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So we've been talking about some fun life hacks here that we've been doing wrong. Now, here's a good one. This one I didn't know about, and I should have known. We check how hot our microwaved food is by putting our hand over the food. You shouldn't do that. When you're microwaving food, feel the bottom of the plate. That's how you tell if it's really warmed through. And that didn't even occur to me, but that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
So feel the bottom of the plate or feel the bottom of the food to see how cooked it is.
Can't tell you how many times I've had food that's top warm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That happens all the time.
Especially with spaghetti. Yeah. Like if I'm reheating pasta, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. 847 area code says, as a mom of hockey players, I wash everything in vinegar. Let me explain something to you about how disgusting hockey equipment is. It is disgusting. It is disgusting. If you have kids who are playing hockey and become teenagers and young men and they continue to play hockey, leave the equipment in the garage or something, because it's disgusting. It's the worst smell. Because you're on the ice, you don't know it. You got sweat soaking into the jerseys or the pants, but into the equipment, like into the pads. Like the most disgusting smelling things in the world are like knee pads and shin guards from hockey uniforms. It's disgusting. Oh.
Because I played football, and that was an nightmare. I can't even imagine.
Hockey's
hockey.
Worse.
Hockey's, yeah.
I mean, I know football stinks. You know, football is stinky, but hockey's worse, man. Hockey is it's the worst smelling sport of all time. When you're not on the ice. When you're not on the ice. You go into a hockey locker room, it's like, oh, man.
Light a match.
Good Lord. And, you know, especially like if you've, it's even worse, you know, if you've got like kids who are growing into teenagers and like, you know, like they're 19, 20 years old. Oh, that smell is going to be really beautiful.
Rocking that lettuce, that hockey hair.
Good Lord. So anyway, as Aileen says, as a mom of hockey players, and I wish you the best, Aileen. Get the clothespin for the nose if you're going for going to wash. I wash everything in vinegar, regular white vinegar. It removes nasty smells from sports equipment, removes mildew smells from towels, and sets the color in newly projected jeans, purchased jeans. It's also a natural fabric softener and sanitizer. No, your clothes will not smell like salad dressing. Listen, vinegar can be used for a ton of different things. Vinegar is one of those things that you can use in so many different ways. And those are just two or three of the ways that you can use vinegar. There's even more than that.
And I'm going to try it now because the towels thing interests me.
Yeah.
Because the towels I have, I've had for way too long.
Okay. Tom from Bartlett said, Reynolds aluminum foil has a perforated circle on each end of the box that you should push in. Yeah, it's not just all aluminum foil has that. It's not just Reynolds. That holds the roll of foil from falling out when you pull it out. I think I heard that on a Mr. Fix-It show. Tom from Bartlett says, "Yeah, no, that's a I don't think people realize that on either side of your roll of aluminum foil there are these little circles that are perforated that you punch in and fold up. And so when you pull the aluminum foil roll, the roll itself will not fly out of the box. It keeps the roll in the box."
That takes me back to my bachelor days.
What?
Wrestling with Reynolds wrap or foil, because I was too much of an idiot to figure that
out. Yeah, it's just those on either end of the box of aluminum foil are these little perforated circles. Push them in, and then fold them up, and it will hold the cardboard roll inside when you're yanking on the aluminum foil. How about this? You jam your hands into a Pringle can, or you pour out to get it, or you pour it all out to get the chips. Here's what they say: an interesting little life hack. Fold a piece of paper into a sleeve and slip it into the can alongside the chips. Then tilt the can and pull the paper sleeve out to get your chips much more neatly. That way, they won't fall all over the place. They won't break. So instead of like sticking your hand into a Pringles can and getting your hand stuck in there and have to go to the ER, or tipping it on the side and all the chips fall out all over the place, get that piece of paper, fold it and into a sleeve, and then just slip it in and tilt the can. How about this one? Pouring your juice from the opening on the bottom. All right, you know how when you have like a carton of juice and they have that plastic screw off top that you pull, you know, you pull the thing off and that's where you pour the thing. Now, most people pour it with the actual plastic pourer on the bottom. But what you do is you flip it over so it's on top, over the flap, and pour it from that way. If you pour the juice from the top, it's easier to control the flow, and you can cut the flow off neatly and quickly without more spillage. So,
I learned that in my bar back days.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, because sometimes they would have me do the finishing touch on the drink. They'd be like, liquor's already in there, just top it off with cranberry, orange juice, whatever. And they taught me to do it from the top. Yeah.
All right, how about this one? You pour Tic Tac straight into your mouth or into your hand. And I don't eat a lot of Tic Tacs. But on the underside of most little Tic Tac packages openings, there is a small indentation. It's literally designed to fit one Tic Tac at a time. So the little indentation on the bottom of the flip lid on your Tic Tac, you just flip it over, and a Tic Tac will be, you can dispense it one Tic Tac at a time.
I'm not eating one Tic Tac at a time. I don't know anybody alive who eats one Tic Tac at a time.
Yeah. All right. That was like back in my drinking days when you would go, hey, let's go get a beer. When was the last time you went out? When I was a drinker, I never went out and had a beer. Never. Let's go get a beer. All right, 8 beers in.
I feel like that's always the implication. It's like a beer.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go get a beer. I never, when I was a drinking man, I never had one beer. I never went out and had one ever. with certainty, I can tell you that I never went out once and had one beer only. But that's, you know, that's the common phrase. Let's go out and get a beer. All right.
And you know there's people out there that do it.
I know, but I don't. I didn't.
No, I don't.
When I was a drinker, I didn't. Well, when I was a drinker, I drank everything in the room, so it didn't. So, wasn't just one beer. It was just one shot? Oh, okay, no. Half bottle of Jameson. That's essentially what's going to go down. All right, we're going to take a break. I'm glad I quit, though. I will say that. I haven't had beer or whiskey, which was my go-to. Schlitz, Jameson. That was my go-to. Be 4 years in June. I have not had a taste of whiskey or beer. It's ridiculous. All right, we'll take a break. News is up next. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We are 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows the show at 5 a.m. And at 6, we have Steve Cochran with your morning drive. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, Major Money Thursday. That's 1 hour, three songs. You want to get in here, it's 312-981-7200. We are talking about some life hacks, things that we've been doing wrong. And some suggestions on how to do things right. And then we're going to jump into fast food menu items that fast food employees say that you should never, ever, ever order. We'll do that in a little bit as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Rod Stewart, Triple Play continues. Let me ask you this, Tom. Have you been to the Globe?
The Globe Theater?
No, the Globe Bar on Irving.
Yeah, the Globe Pub with the Globe soccer Pub. Bar. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I was just wondering, because if you're that into soccer, that's the place to go.
Yeah, definitely.
That place is run by my former boss at Ginger's Ale House.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No,
great time.
He's not. No, actually, you know what? He's not with the Globe anymore. He went back to the space at Ginger's Ale House and reopened it under a different name. When I worked at Ginger's, the soccer fanatics would come in and. You know, it'd be like 8 o'clock in the morning watching games.
That's a tough thing to explain to people when you're sitting in your pajamas at like, I'll be up at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. My girlfriend will come out and I'm three beers deep.
Yeah.
And it's just really weird.
Yeah, no, it is weird. But I mean, that's what we used to like the people would come into the bar and watch the soccer games. It'd be like 7 o'clock in the morning. Just serving booze. So, but I was just interested because you said you were a soccer fan. So. And we're talking about life hacks that will help you out, things that we've been doing wrong. All this time, we've been doing this wrong. Glenn in Evanston says, my girlfriend had the worst foot odor. I'm sure she's thrilled that he shared this text to a 50,000-watt radio station. I'm sure.
38 states and Canada, baby.
Yeah, man. Especially at this time. Until I suggested soaking her feet in vodka. Eventually, the odor went away and stayed away. In vodka?
Okay.
What about urinating in the shower?
Urinating in the shower is supposed to be the, that's the, you know.
I thought that was just convenient.
No, I thought only George Costanza did that. You know who advocates urinating in the shower and on your own feet and on your legs? Madonna. Madonna.
Well, if it's good enough for Madonna, it's good enough for me.
That's all I need.
Will it turn me into a number one hit maker? You know?
Yeah. You ever seen Madonna live?
No, that's one of my, one of my great regrets in life. I'm sure, I mean, it's not like she's dead or anything.
No. Well, she just released an album.
Yeah. So I'd go see Madonna live.
Oh, man. Well, Yeah. I've seen her like six times.
Something tells me, though, she's on the precipice of like maybe doing a Vegas residency.
Oh, yeah. No. That's sort of the way she's going.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind.
But no, it's ridiculous when you see Madonna. I saw her on the Blonde Ambition tour, and it was incredible.
What was the tour when she was dating Warren Beatty or Beatty?
That was the Blonde Ambition tour.
That was Blonde Ambition.
Yeah, that was documented in the movie.
That's a great movie.
Yeah. What the hell is the name of it? Truth or Dare? Madonna, Truth or Dare? It's a great movie.
Yeah.
My favorite is, I mean, I adore that movie. I love that because I love Madonna and I love that movie and all the behind the scenes stuff is fantastic and all the concert footage is great. And like Beatty, like not wanting to be on camera, he's just so pissed that he's backstage and there's cameras everywhere and he's dating, you know, Warren Beatty, one of these guys who's like one of the, you know, wants to stay out of the press, doesn't like cameras around him. tries to avoid, you know, press, is dating the woman who no other woman on the planet at that time loved being in front of a camera more than Madonna. And, you know, loved standing in front of a camera, loved all of that, loved all of the attention, still does. But at that point, she lived to be on camera. And the fact that Warren Beatty was dating this person who adored being on camera and was on camera all the time is endlessly amusing. But one of my favorite parts, I mean, I love the whole movie, but one of my favorite parts is at that time I was really annoyed with Kevin Costner when that movie came out. I had just like had it with Kevin Costner because I hated Dances with Wolves, and Dances with Wolves beat Goodfellas for, you know, and he won Best Director over Martin Scorsese, which is just one of the most ridiculous things in the history of the Academy. And so I found him really annoying. And then there's a scene where he comes backstage and he's got his kid with him, and he goes up to Madonna and he's like, "We really enjoyed the show. Thank you very much." And she's like, "Oh, okay, great." He goes, "We thought it was neat." And then he walk away and Madonna looks at him and does like the vomit, like sticking her finger down her mouth, down her throat kind of gesture, and goes, "Neat? Nobody calls my show neat." I almost fell out of the show. First time I saw, I've seen that movie like 800 times, but the first time I saw it, pretty amazing. How about this? Unloading canned drinks into your fridge one at a time. So if you got a case of beer or you got a case of pop or something, open up both ends, open up all the flaps, slide the whole thing in, push the cans out as you slide the case out. And you can do all 24 cans will come out, boom, like that.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll give that a shot.
It totally works.
Both ends, and as you're pushing it in,
you open both ends. So both ends are open. You're holding it up. You put it on the bottom shelf or whatever shelf you're putting it on, and then you start to push the cans from the back end and pull the box out as you're pushing it, and then all the cans just slide right in all together. Without like putting him in one at a time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So here's John on WGN. Hey, John.
Hey, they were talking about vodka to get rid of odors. Back in the days before Febreze, I worked in a theater, and when you were supposed to be dry cleaning people's shirts, if they were just a little stinky but not really dirty, you would spray the shirt with vodka out of a spray bottle, and it would smell like it just came from the dry cleaner. It would get rid of all the body odors.
Really?
That was an old trick. You spray them with vodka.
Spray it with vodka. Okay. All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks.
So it would smell like it came from the dry cleaner, and it wouldn't smell like you were an alcoholic? Well, I'm not sure I understand. All right, I don't understand vodka. I don't understand. I wasn't a vodka drinker when I was a drinker. I like the brown stuff. I like the whiskey. Here's another mistake. You cross things out with a straight line. If you really don't want someone to be able to read what you've crossed out, write over your mistakes with other words and or scribbles. It makes your errors much harder to decipher. A lot of people don't even write anymore, so it doesn't apply. Now, here's the one that makes me, that I've heard a million times, is that you pour your Chinese takeout out of the container that it comes in before you eat it. They're saying that's a mistake. If you unfold the takeout container, it becomes an actual little paper plate that you can eat off of. I've never done that once in my life. And when I heard that that's how you were supposed to, or that's what it was meant to be, I thought it was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Because I have never finished an entire container of any kind of Chinese food ever. There's always leftovers. Oh, and I've been eating Chinese food for 50 years. And I'm telling you, those containers, you put them right back in the fridge. That's what for me, they're not plates, they're containers. So
I know. People are really into that whole thing. And, well, whenever I get Chinese food, it's usually because there's a few people and you're sharing a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to unfold the box.
Yeah. Well, I live alone. I order Chinese food for myself.
Right.
And there's always leftovers. I'm not going to finish.
No.
You know, I'm not going to use it as a plate. And then what? Oh, well, now I've got leftovers, so I'm going to put it in a Tupperware? What is that? I mean, how convenient is that supposed to be?
Either way, that food's coming out.
Yeah. When you reheat leftover pasta, I mean, this is for you, Just throw it all in as one heaping pile of noodles. Don't do that. When you're reheating, try spreading your pasta around into the shape of a donut. It'll heat much more evenly and much quicker.
That makes sense.
And then finally, when you want a cold beverage ASAP, you throw your drink in the freezer and hope for the best. But that's not what you should do. The fastest way to cool down a glass bottle is to wrap it in a wet paper towel and put it in the fridge or the freezer if you're that desperate. So get that wrapped paper towel, a wet paper towel wrapped around it, and that'll work.
That's actually a really good tip.
Yeah.
That's a very good tip.
Very good tip. All right. Okay. We're going to take a break. We've got the weather here. And then after the weather and the break, we're going to jump into fast food menu items that fast food employees say you should never, ever eat. This is a public service to everybody who is listening. Hey, I just need to say that this set of Triple Play Thursday this morning has been pretty amazing.
Very good.
Like, we've heard some great, like, that's one of the best songs ever. We also heard Deacon Blues a little early. Mm-hmm. We heard Badge by Cream.
Yep.
I mean, what are we talking about this morning?
Everybody's on their A game this Thursday.
You, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! One artist, three songs. Again, that's Rod Stewart wrapping up that Triple Play. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. All right. Tom, you ever work at a fast food place?
No, not really. I guess you could call the working at the theater a little bit of fast food things. We're making pizzas, we're making hot dogs, but nothing like a McDonald's. Not like working at the Big M.
Yeah, you don't know what you're missing.
I think I know exactly what I'm missing.
I worked at McDonald's for a few years when I was in high school. That was, by the way, when I worked at McDonald's. And this was almost 40 years ago when I worked at McDonald's. The McRib was a regular sandwich. It was not seasonal. It was available on the menu all the time.
That's the kind of world I want to live in.
Yeah, me too. When I started at McDonald's, that's when we first debuted the chicken nuggets. I was there before, you know, I was there when the nuggets first debuted. That's how long ago it was that I worked at McDonald's. And there are some things that you probably shouldn't order, at least back in my... Now, I know that the preparation and the menu is completely different than it was when I worked there.
Yeah, now they're in the never frozen game.
Yeah.
I will say...
The patties were frozen when I worked there.
Oh, yeah. I will say the beef has slightly improved.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of people out there have worked in fast food restaurants in the past. And, you know, many people, when they're a teenager, it's like your first job. And it was my first job. My first job was at McDonald's. My second job was at Jewel, and I held that job for a really long time. And then, because of my association with, with Roy Leonard, who I owe everything to, I was able to quit the Jewels and work. He had a magazine, that we published called Roy Leonard's Going Out Guide. And I was managing editor of that until I got the actual on-air show here. So I only had one really crappy job, and that was McDonald's. Jewel was fine. I thought working at Jewel was fine. And Jewel's a great company to work for. I will always maintain that, especially if it's you're just part-time or you're going through college. The hourly rate is really good, and it gets better. And they give you benefits.
As a part-timer?
Yes.
Wow.
You get benefits. You get health insurance, and you get benefits. And there are not a lot of companies that do that.
No.
Now, I know that the union is different now than it was when I was there.
Right.
And I'm sure that some of the rules are a little bit different than they were before. But it still was. I would recommend, if you have a teenage kid and they want to work at the Jewels, it's great, especially if you're going to college and you just want to work 3-4 days a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I dropped out of college, but that's okay. But anyway, fast food restaurant. The first job I ever had was at a hot dog stand on Lincoln Avenue, right around the corner from my house. And, you know, I used to eat there all the time. When I was in grade school, eighth grade, that's where we had lunch. I used to eat there all the time. And so finally, you know, I got to know, you know, I knew the owner. I knew the people that worked there. And he was like, well, if you want to come back and I'll give you a job, you can, you know, work here, sling hot dogs and stuff. So I got there and there was no training. And I was helping out. And then I discovered that – the owner, who I had like really given a lot of money to and really liked and had a good time, discovered while I was working there, a little backstage antics. He was married, but he was also a cokehead and having an affair with a 16-year-old girl who worked there.
Yeehaw.
And I was like, I lasted 2 days, because the second day I was like, I can't do this.
And you know what? I forgot. I did work at a fast food place. I worked at Cheesy's.
Oh, the grilled cheese place.
Yeah, but back when they only recently closed it, but they had one up in Evanston, and I worked up there for a summer.
Yeah.
That's
similar. It's not quite.
It's like fast casual.
Yeah.
A little bit more Chipotle.
Yeah.
Style.
Ordering at a fast food restaurant can sometimes feel like a gamble. You might want to... You don't know you're eating to be tasty and delicious, but at the same time, you're pretty aware that that could have been prepared in a gross way or just completely unhealthy. You logically know that you shouldn't eat fast food, or at least you shouldn't make it a habit, but sometimes it's worth it. Can the stuff be really that disgusting? As it turns out, many fast food employees agree, yeah, it definitely can be that disgusting. So here are some fast food menu items that fast food employees say don't order. Number one, don't order original recipe chicken from KFC right before they close. I would say that would be true of a lot of fast food. That was certainly true of us at McDonald's. Reddit user Daft Funky says, "Who says they worked at KFC in a small town recommends not ordering menu items shortly before KFC is closing." They warned you might get chicken that was in the heat oven several hours old or worse, dropped on the floor as a bucket of chicken. Actually, one common warning for many users is to avoid ordering pretty much anything right after the fast food place is closing. Cooks are cleaning and they want to leave, which means that the more haphazard the food is, they don't put much effort into it. And that's absolutely correct. I can attest to that. And we used to have a warming bin that we would fill up with food. So there was like one aisle. It was on a tilt, and we would package the burgers and slide them down, and then you'd put a number behind it, like a metal number that would slide in behind it, and that number indicated the number indicated 10 minutes from. So let's say it's 4:30. So I'd put 40. I'd put the number 40 behind the Big Macs that I just put in, because they're supposed to be in that bin for no longer than 10 minutes. Can't tell you the number of times we switched out those numbers.
Yeah.
Cannot tell you the number of times we... Oh, 40? Well, I'm going to put a 50 in now.
Oh, my God.
No. Avoid the filet of fish at McDonald's. Now, this upsets me. I don't know why. I haven't read this. I love the filet of fish. Mm. I love the filet of fish. One of the things I love about the filet of fish is the steamed bun. It sets it apart. It's not toasted. It's a lovely steamed bun. Many Reddit users who said that they were McDonald's employees advised against ever ordering a filet-o-fish sandwich. One person said, don't order the filet-o-fish because 9/10 of the burger has been sitting in the tray for over an hour. Basically, the filet-o-fish sandwich isn't as popular as the rest of the menu, which means that it doesn't get changed out as often as burger. Well, that's true.
Yeah.
According to employees, when you order one, you could be getting one that's so old it's been sitting under the heat lamp all day. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay, yes, that's true.
Admit it.
Not during Lent, though.
No, they're
not
flying.
During Lent. They're flying. I'm telling you from personal experience, man. Yeah. Skip the veggie burger at Culver's. This is the first time I've ever heard anybody say skip anything at Culver's. Seriously.
Yeah.
If you're a vegetarian or a vegan, you don't want to take advantage of the Culver's veggie option, as it may not be as meat-free as it seems. One person says, I work at Culver's. Do not order a veggie burger from a fast food place. We keep our veggie patties frozen in the back in our freezer, and when someone orders one, we nuke it in the microwave for half a minute and thaw it, and then we cook it on the grill that's been used to cook beef patties all day, whilst making jokes about how disgusting the veggie burgers are. Oh, man.
I mean, if you're a vegetarian, just avoid Culver's altogether.
Well, yeah, you're not going to go to... If you're a vegetarian, you shouldn't go to a fast food place.
Are you going
to
order cheese curds?
Yeah. Which are probably fried in meat grease.
Yeah.
So, I love Culver's.
Oh, it's the best.
Oh, my God. All right. We're going to take a break here. We got the news coming up. And then, if you ever worked at a fast food place, you got some stories. We got more fast food menu items that fast food employees say, yeah, no, don't order it. We'll be right back.
I'm ready for it.
This makes me think of a play that I directed and I appeared in called White Trash Wedding and a Funeral. in it, when I directed it, it is one of the most insanely... it ran for 3 years. It was as a late night show at Factory. And it is without question one of the most profane and consistently unspeakably vulgar things that I've ever been a part of. I mean, every kind of bodily fluid joke was in. I mean, everything. Everything you can imagine that is absolutely and unbelievably filthy was in this play. And I remember reading it. Mike Byer and Bill Havley were the playwrights. And I remember reading it when they asked me to direct it. And I read it, and I was like, oh, my God. And so they had written it as a two-act. And so I told them, there's no way there's going to be a good portion of people who are not going to come back for the second act, so we have to make this one and done. We have to, in order to not to lose the audience. I mean, it ended up being a huge hit and everything. And it was one of those deals where it was like, it was one of these, let's get this done as fast as possible. So I had them screen their lines as fast as possible. And it ended up doing great business. Really, really great business. We had walkouts. But, so my idea was, we need to make this a one act. But the first part of the play is the rehearsal dinner or drinking, basically, at the VFW hall.
Naturally.
And then the second act is the wedding, which leads into an impromptu funeral because someone dies because they danced too much to the chicken dance and they died. So the actors needed to do costume changes. That's why we needed to break it up into two acts, because they're in like their wedding, you know, they're terrible, you know, tuxes and terrible, but they had to do, you know, it was a cast of like 14, and 14 people needed to change. Actually, 12 people needed to change. Two people weren't in at the top. So I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. Let's do like a flashback to connect the two, and let's have two of the characters that don't have to do a quick change perform a song as though they were at a karaoke. So they're like, so one of the characters was George, who was the bartender slash pastor. And the other was a guy named Drew, and he was the biggest idiot among all of the idiots in the play. So the idea was to merge these two so the audience wouldn't leave disgusted. So I was like, okay, well, just let's do this. Have George walk up to Drew and say, hey, man, that was great. You remember that time when we were at the karaoke bar and we won first prize? And they're like, yeah, I remember it like it was yesterday. And then we bring the lights down so it's a flashback. And when the lights come back up, the two characters are on a stage at the karaoke contest, and they perform LaGrange, the song that you just...
Amazing.
Now, the reason why I chose LaGrange is because there's only one verse in the entire song. So to actually choose that song to play at karaoke, I thought was maybe the stupidest choice that any human being could have, and they win first prize. That's how stupid everybody is in this play. So we would perform, we would lip sync to LaGrange every night, and it used to get standing ovations. People went nuts. And we did like all kinds of weird dance routines and stuff during it, because it's all, because there's only the ow, how, how. There's only that one verse.
Yeah.
That's it. And then the rest is
guitar solos.
Yeah, it's all guitar solos. So we did that for, we didn't do the whole song. We did about 2.5-3 minutes of the song. And then we would fade to black and people would go nuts. And that was enough time for people to get changed. So it reminds me of performing that every night. And people going nuts. But that's every time I hear it, nah, 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 nah. It's all I think about is White Trash Wedding and a Funeral. And people who have seen the show say the same thing. They're like, anytime I hear LaGrange on the radio, I just picture you two idiots on the stage not singing and acting like you're playing guitar. But every time I hear it, I think of White Trash Wedding and a Funeral. Who requested the ZZ Top? Do we remember?
Yes, we got them right here. Brad in Chicago Ridge.
Brad in Chicago Ridge. Thank you, Brad.
You know what I love about ZZ Top?
What?
So it's three guys, Billy Gibbons, yeah. Dusty Hill, and Frank Beard. The only guy who doesn't have a beard is
named Beard. Yeah. It's a great little detail right there. 724 area code says, I worked fast food and I can't think of any one item that you shouldn't order, which is what we're talking about. We're talking about fast food menu items that fast food workers say you shouldn't order. There are certain times of the day when you probably don't want to order. You never want to be the very first or the very last group of customers for the day, as they are the lowest points from a quality standpoint. That's true. That's what we're discovering is a pretty consistent thing. 312 says, in Nick's days, they would clean out the entire fry bin in for one order of unsalted fries. That's absolutely true. People used to get so mad. The workers who worked up front used to get so mad when people ordered fries without salt because you had to clean out. You had to take the bin out, wipe it out, clean it just for one batch of fries. Now they just pour the fries from the basket directly into the fry container. So they take the, now instead of putting it in the bin, they take the thing that the container with, you know, that you dump the fries in, they drain that and then just dump it right into your into the fry container as opposed to putting it into the bin.
Spectacular.
Yeah. Okay, here's more fast food menu items that you shouldn't order according to people who work at fast food places. You might want to wait before going to Taco Bell during the day. If you have a serious craving for Taco Bell for lunch, you might want to put it off a bit. According to one Reddit user, they said, the food is all carried over from the night before. Ooh. If you don't mind leftover and reheated fast food, then by all means, walk in there as soon as they flip the close sign to open. But if you want something more fresh, you might want to wait, be more patient. One of the worst fast food combination establishments in the city is at Irving Park in California. Now, I haven't been there in a really long time, but I used to stop there before I'd go drinking at Ricochet's. I would take the bus, get off. It's Taco Bell KFC.
Yeah.
Now, they have since remodeled. They might be under new management because I have not been there. Like I said, I haven't been to, I haven't been to a bar in 4 years, so I have at least not been there in 4 years. I went in there one time, and I ordered from the Taco Bell side. And when I walked in, I was like, "I'll take it." And the person behind the counter goes, "Listen, we're out of taco shells and lettuce." I go, "Isn't that all you serve? That's all you serve, right? Is Taco Bell? Is Taco
right?"
All right, so I ended up getting a couple of burritos, okay? Obviously without the lettuce. So I got a couple of burritos. I go in there another time, and I go to the KFC side. And they're like, I was going to order the chicken sandwich. And I go up, and they're like, we're out of chicken sandwich patties. I'm like, what the hell? What is this place? The worst. And then, like, if you order something, it took like 10 minutes to get. Just standing there, and the quality was really bad. It was like the worst fast food combo establishment ever. If the Taco Bell side sucked, you'd go, all right, well, then I'll go to KFC. And that sucked. You have no choice. But I couldn't believe it. We have no taco shells and lettuce. Really.
No.
Why is the sign on that's open? Why are you open if you have no taco shells and lettuce? Yeah.
That happened once at Cheesy's that we literally ran out of bread.
Oh, God.
And people were trying to get their Cheesy's. I was like, but there's no bread.
There's no bread.
We're a grilled cheese establishment.
That's crazy.
Can I get some chili or something?
Yeah.
No.
How about this? Never get ice, no matter where you are. Ice machines are a shaky thing, man. You know. You worked in the bar business.
Yeah, but I did a good job. You know, we cleaned it every
day. Yeah. our comment that popped up on almost every Reddit thread about fast food employees had this: get your drinks with no ice. I can't tell you the number of ice machines that I've seen with mold and dead flies in the bottom. Many employees agreed, saying that they never wash the ice machines, or they only do it very sparingly. It might be safer with warm soda. I can kind of attest to that.
You weren't cleaning the ice machines over at Mickey D's?
Well, in a couple of bars I was working at. A couple of bars I was working at, too. I bartended at three, four different places, and ice machines are a little shaky, man.
The only place I was bar backing at a high-end steakhouse, so it was...
Yeah, of course. The standards are going to be a little bit different than some dive bar on the corner.
Right.
All right, how about this? You probably shouldn't want dipped cones at McDonald's. As you know, McDonald's offers a bunch of delicious-looking dessert options along with their regular meal menu items. However, some may be a little less sanitary than others. A Reddit user said, I worked at McDonald's for about a month. Don't order the dipped cones. They leave the chocolate out all day. The top layer will congeal, and they just mix that crap back up and still use it.
Ugh.
Not to mention, at McDonald's I worked, we sprayed trays off next to the chocolate. So, oh, God. We sprayed the trays off next to the chocolate. So how much chemicals do you get in that? In talking about this on the air, I'm sensing a bunch of people going, I'm never going to a fast food place ever again.
Ugh.
How about this? You should hold off on some desserts at Burger King.
Should hold off on Burger King.
I'm a fan of Burger King.
I used to be.
I'm a fan of Burger King. I don't care if it's unhygienic. I like Burger King. Ice cream from fast food places may seem like a safe bet because, after all, how much can you mess up something as delicious and frozen? As it turns out, you can a lot. One Reddit user says, do not order ice cream or shakes from Burger King. The machines are rarely clean. Sometimes the shake mix has already expired. Basically, it seems like anything in a fast food that comes out of a machine is less sanitary. Now here's one. You probably don't want to order the roast beef from Arby's.
Is that what they serve?
Yeah. Here's what they say. Arby's is known for their meat sandwiches, but one of their meats might not be exactly what it seems, according to several employees. One said, when we receive the roast beef, it's not actually solid. It's a bag of beef paste that solidifies after 3 hours in the oven. They added, if you order the roast beef in the first few hours the place was opened, you're getting yesterday's leftover roast beef. It's just been in the holding oven overnight. It's nothing but a giant hot dog that's mechanically separated beef chunks that are mixed with fat and pressed into a 10-pound lump. I still love it.
I've never understood the appeal of Arby's.
Oh, come on, man.
It's just sweaty beef.
Beef and cheddar? One of the greatest sandwiches in fast food
history. I'm here for the curly fries. I'll go to Arby's for those curly fries.
And here's the thing. I go with potato cakes when I go to Arby's. I don't go curly fries. I go potato cakes.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Potato cakes are awesome. They're awesome.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Come on, man. Beef and cheddar. Roast beef, the Arby's barbecue sauce on an onion roll. Come on, man! I can eat 80 of those.
It's sweaty beef. It looks like an old man at Lifetime Fitness after a time on the treadmill, dripping off of it.
Clearly, it's some sort of altered beef, but I don't care. I love Arby's. I love it.
That's a good band name, Altered Beef.
Altered Beef. Yeah, that was my radio name in college. Yeah, man, Altered Beef. Here's the weather. All right, let's take a break here, and we'll come back and talk more about this fast food stuff right here on 720 WGN. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich is coming up at 5 with the opening bell. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All of that coming up right here on 720 WGN. We've been talking about fast food menu items that fast food employees say that you should never, ever, ever order. Next, they suggest you stop ordering from the secret menu at Starbucks. If you've ever gone on the internet, then you almost definitely heard of the Starbucks secret menu. It's supposedly made up of tons of unique drink combinations that aren't on the real menu, and they all have their own names. A lot of people will walk into Starbucks and order one of these, but employees are literally begging you not to. One Reddit user says, if you want a Snickerdoodle, Nutella, or Captain Crunch Frappuccino, or whatever overly sugary thing someone has come up with, know the base drink and the modifications, and order that. If you just say the name, it's up to the barista to come up with whatever's in the drink, and it may not be the last barista you ordered and what you put what was put in there. No secret menu from Starbucks. How about this? Think twice before ordering chicken nuggets from McDonald's. Chicken nuggets are a really popular item at McDonald's, but that doesn't mean they're made fresh for every customer. They're not. I was there. Like most fast food places, they're made and then placed under a heater. I used to work at McDonald's. If you order especially chicken nuggets, ask for them fresh. Otherwise, they've been sitting in the container in heat. They have a time, but 9 times out of 10, when the timer goes off, people just reset the timer instead of making new ones. And that goes for the chicken nuggets as well. That's why they're sold. That's exactly right. I don't know if they do it now, but you used to make batches of chicken nuggets, and there was this three-drawer heater. You would pull the drawer out, dump the nuggets in, close the drawer, and then that's where you would keep the nuggets. They would be in this heater in this drawer. And like that person just said, I can't even tell you how many times we would just serve them right out of the heater, and they've been sitting there for a long time. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, I called you a while back. I don't know if you remember the story about we're working overnight and a drunk pulls up in a car and is like, where are we? Do you remember that story?
No, go ahead, but I'm running out of time. Tell me what you need to call
okay,
me about
okay,
now.
Listen. A buddy of mine got a new job in an office-type building in the mill, and he was a millwright, and they said, you know, and you take care of anything that comes up. So they said, could you check the ice machine? It's not working, you know? So he goes and starts tearing it apart, checking it out, and he's checking the water line, and it's just full of algae. And he's thinking, well, you know, what's this? And they use two types of water out there. They have service water, which is directly out of Lake Michigan, and then you have potable water, which is treated water from the water company. Well, somebody had hooked up the ice machine to the service water.
Oh.
For God knows how many years, these people were using ice that was frozen Lake Michigan water directly out of the lake.
God. Oh, that's disgusting.
Okay, second story. This guy was an instructor. He says, I don't have enough material for this whole week-long class, so in the afternoons, if you want to bring in some movies, or we'll just sit around and BS, you know, and kill time for the rest of the day. So that's what we did. The guy married a rancher's daughter out west. He said he went to a cattle auction with his future father-in-law. At the end of the auction, there's like three or four dead cows laying there. There's some with big old sores in their sides and stuff, you know, that are still barely alive. This guy comes up, and he says, yeah, yeah, I'll take all of these. You know, so they're dragging them out with a tractor, you know, putting them in a truck. And he asks his future father-in-law, he says, is that guy from the dog food company or something? He goes, no, he's from McDonald's.
Oh, there you go. He's from McDonald's. That's good. All right. By the way, here's another one that's on this list. And by the way, if you want to check out the entire list, because there's a lot more here of fast food, because we're running out of time. Fast food. Steve, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 here. It's on our Facebook page if you want to read the entire article. It's at facebook.com/NickDShow. It's linked up right there. If you want to, so like us, check it out, and read the article if you want, because there are a lot more items on this list. So it's facebook.com/NickDShow. 708 area code says, beef and cheddar with Arby's sauce and horsey sauce kicks ass. See? See what I'm saying? 815 area code says, what about draft beer? This is a whole nother thing. Our bars use the same glass, putting it up to the nozzle thingy. You do not do that. Do not rub put the glass, the pint glass up into the nozzle, touching it. You don't do that. It's so unhygienic. 847 area code. Buffalo Wild Wings. Two different times, two different locations, out of boneless wings. 815 area code says, good morning, Nick. The only thing better than a beef and cheddar is a bacon beef and cheddar. Yeah! See? The Arby's people are coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah, the woodwork.
You can't talk nasty about Arby's.
I'll fight them.
Here's Tony on WGN. Hey, Tony.
Hey, real quick, talking about Arby's. Your buddy there that gets the curly fries?
Yeah.
Do you ever realize you get far less potatoes with girly fries? just do the volume factor. It's the same size container.
Oh,
and
true.
The take up a,
that's true.
A lot of empty space.
That's true. That's why I go with the potato cakes, Tony.
Yeah, you got the best deal going there. And by the way, McDonald's doesn't buy cows.
No,
they buy beef from distributors.
I know that. I know. Yeah, that's. Yeah, I was taking that with that. A little grain of salt. You know.
Yeah.
I think Steve just wanted to really lay into the description. That's what I think he was trying to do.
Yeah, he's going to hurt. He's going to hurt McDonald's tremendously.
Yeah. All right, Tony.
I'm selling their stock today. Thanks.
All right, Isaiah. All right, last one. And I've heard this one. I can't tell you the number of times I've heard this one. Avoid Wendy's chili.
Oh.
A lot of employees have advised against it. Many have said that the meat used in the chili is leftover hamburger patty meat, and there's nothing fresh on it. And this is true. I've heard this so many times, that the meat that's in Wendy's chili is, the chili is fine, but it's the old burger patties that didn't sell. And that's what we're supposed to do with the leftover hamburgers, break it up and throw it into the chili. And I can't tell you the number of times I've heard that. The meat in the Wendy's chili is just no good. So there you go. Well, good morning, everybody. Enjoy your breakfast, and if you're stopping off, you're stopping off at a drive-through to grab a nice Egg McMuffin or something. Yeah.
Think twice.
Again, if you want to read the whole thing and see some pictures and all that kind of stuff, we have a link of the article that I was reading from available on our Facebook page right now at facebook.com/NickDShow. Tom, tomorrow on the show, we have somebody from Zine Fest.
Yeah, the Chicago Zine Fest.
Yeah,
it's going to be a lot of fun.
Cool. And we have our regular Friday features as well. All right, we'll take a break. The news is coming up right after this.